This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Welcome to Place to Be Nation's comprehensive look at the news and happenings throughout today's wrestling universe. Hosts JT Rosero, Steve Willey, and Nate Milton are joined by insiders and guests to take you around the wrestling world on PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines. Take it away, boys. It's Lariat time.
And it's the X-Trays. We all are fired.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of Clotheslines and Headlines. I am your co-host, JT Rosero, and we have a lot to talk about tonight because, as the cool kids all say, we're going to be all hail, Paul! A lot going on in the world of WWE and, of course, around the world of wrestling, and this is the only place to be in the world of wrestling to catch you up on the wrestling world. And with me, as always, one of my partners here on the round table of Clotheslines and Headlines, that is the Godfather, Nate Milton. Nate, how are you?
I am doing good, brother. And first of all, man, I just want to apologize to everybody for not standing during the Place to Be National Anthem. but in my defense, you know, I've been stuck on my couch for the past 48 hours following what we saw on Monday night, brother.
But, I mean, in your defense, too, you're a shitty quarterback as well, so it's okay. And you heard him giggle in the background, and he is back with us. Missed the last episode because he was preparing and packing to spend the weekend with me, and it was a glorious weekend. And that is my good friend and roommate, I guess now we'll just say, Steve Willey. Surrogate, you know, kind of co-dad, co-parent. I think we covered it all, right?
Yeah, I took care of your kids.
Name, Steve Willey. I don't know if I said it officially. There you go.
Sorry. And I'm sorry for breaking the cardinal rule of not waiting for my name.
We call that a will, where you just talk over the whole open and then you get introduced.
Hey, when Nate lands a joke, generally they're good enough to laugh too.
That's why I usually introduce him last, but I wanted to build to your big return.
Yeah, and I'm excited to be back. And yeah, we had a fabulous time out in beautiful Rhode Island, where I caught a cold that has turned into bronchitis. Hmm. Yeah, thanks, East Coast.
You're not used to those Rhode Island 8s and 9s, which are like Wisconsin 25s, you know, so it just knocked you on your ass.
Yeah, I did faint a little bit at some of the women that I saw out there. Not used to seeing those types around, except in my own house, of course.
Oh, is it the Boneheads?
Oh, so good.
Or the Dells.
Oh, even better.
There you go. All right. Also awesome and sexy and beautiful with us here tonight is our special guest, our first special guest. We have a bunch coming. But first, out of the gate, we're going to bring in our West Coast correspondent, Todd Weber, here to talk a little bit of our opening segment and then as well covering WWE with us. Todd Lee, how are you?
JT, Steve, Nate, it is truly an honor and a pleasure to be here on Clotheslines and Headlines, Place to Be Nation's premier news and commentary show.
I like it a lot. It's nice and smooth. Still better than my choppy opens that I'm working on here. Todd, an OG of the Place to Be, of course, one of our original fans and listeners, so always exciting to have him as part of the roundtable crew on any of these podcasts. So what we want to do, since you know we have news to talk about, but here on this show, we only consider it news if it breaks like the day of. So we're going to cover the big stories of the week, of the past 2 weeks, in our segments that correspond to each promotion. But since there's no hot breaking news like we had last episode, what we're going to do is I wanted to kind of reset things. Now, SummerSlam's in the rearview mirror. Tomorrow starts September. We're entering the fall season. Kids are going back to school. Teachers going back to work, crying, all upset, even though they had 3 months off. That's happening. And, you know, wrestling's entering a weird time. WWE normally is the fall doldrum. Seems like they may be trying to, you know, spur that this year with the brand split and everything going on. We're starting year-end awards kind of things with, you know, Wrestling Observer. Ballots will be coming out soon. And that always, in my mind, seems to rejuvenate a lot of people that are maybe having that late summer dog days dip of a wrestling fandom. So what I want to do with our roundtable here is kind of take your temperature as a wrestling fan. Like, where are you at? Where's your mindset at? What are you watching right now? Are you watching anything? Are you completely burnt out? Are you overloaded? Or are you as locked in as ever and excited for the fall when it comes to wrestling? So I thought it was a cool time to kind of stop, and maybe we'll do this again, you know, in like around January heading into Mania to see where we're all at. But Steve, I want you to start, because this really all came to mind because you've been talking about, kind of where you're at, where your mindset is when it comes to wrestling. And I think you experienced the same thing last year. And do you think it's, you know, overload from a busy weekend of wrestling at SummerSlam? Was it just in general timing in your life, or just kind of where are you at right now? What's your mindset?
For me, there's a few things that are going on. One, when you go to a long weekend of wrestling, gosh, SummerSlam was what? We were there for 6 hours. NXT was about 2.5, 3 hours. And being around that many wrestling fans, for better and for worse, and I'm sure you'll go into that when you start talking about it. You get a little tired, and you know, I came
back
home.
Your belt is ugly, Steve, that you're wearing right now. That's all I know.
Yes, I know. And I'm going to shout about it during this entire podcast. You know, like, I came home to watch Raw, and I'm like, you know, I really don't want to watch this at all. You know, almost you get to the point where you're WWE'd out. And part of it is, even with the changes, everything sounds and looks the same constantly. So if you've gone into a deep dive of current WWE, you can get burned out on it pretty quickly. And I had been watching a little bit more since the brand split, just to see what was going to happen. The other part is, I've kind of been turned off by wrestling fans as of late. And we talked before we went on the air. I kind of stepped away from Twitter for a bit because I got tired of all the negativity and the sniping. My promotion is that I follow is better than your promotion that you follow. And, you know, if you don't like that, then you're stupid. You know, the stuff that you see in middle school cafeterias across the nation. So, I know, I just kind of stepped back from that, too, and trying to just kind of watch the kind of wrestling I like and do it a little bit less. You know, when you're involved in it as deeply as we are, there are things that you miss. I'm pretty good with the family, but there are, you know, other things in pop culture that, you know, I haven't watched Netflix in about 4 years at this point. There's stacks of comics, as Todd knows how this happens, you know, they're just reaching to the sky that I haven't read yet. So I'm kind of cutting myself off a little bit. You know, I watch enough to stay up for the show tonight, and I watch enough to be informed for the show in a couple weeks. But I think I'm going to kind of stick to the Cruiserweight Classic. I'll watch that. I have like 18 weeks of New Japan on Access that I can catch up on, because, you know, that's the kind of stuff that's fallen behind. And, you know, that's probably about it. I usually keep up with Ring of Honor, but that's an easy watch for me.
Yeah, I mean, for me, and, you know, we'll kind of get into this a little bit later, too, when we talk about what happened Monday. But I've really settled into where I want to be as a wrestling fan, and I'm just kind of sticking with it. And that is, I know I'm always going to like wrestling, love wrestling. Mm-hmm. I'm always going to watch a lot of wrestling. It may be older stuff. It may be newer stuff. It may be different stuff. It's always going to be there. I'm always going to watch it.
Yep.
But when it comes to the newer stuff, I'm not getting to the point anymore where I'm, like, super invested in who's being pushed, why, when, where, how, who's getting over strong. So I don't know if it's saying the business aspect of it doesn't interest me as much anymore. I don't find myself, like, you know, looking for news or scoops or anything else anymore. It's like, I just kind of want to watch. If it's someone I like, I want them to do well. You know, if they're having great matches, that's good enough for me. If they're being showcased, I'm happy. You know, Cesaro, is he getting the push he deserves? No. But you know what? He's getting a lot of TV time. He wrestles great matches. I like watching him wrestle. Like, that's, I'm happy with that. I had an awesome time in SummerSlam. I know I was, you know, bitching on and off about stuff we were talking about off air, Steve. But overall, it was like, you know, I mean, for what WWE is, it was great. I mean, for what they're going to put on, I think they have a max ceiling right now. And that's, I don't know, maybe just along the way somewhere I've just accepted it is what it is, and I don't have the power or desire to fight it. Like, and that was where a lot of my angst came on Monday. It's like, what more, you know, why are you surprised that Triple H was involved in the main event? Like, that to me, that's like the least surprising thing. And it was like the people that were bitching at WrestleMania about, like, the celebrities and the bands. It's like, why are you surprised? Like, that is what WWE is. Well, it could be better. Yeah, of course it could be better. Anything could be better. You know, I think football's great, and it could be way fucking better than it is. It's like, anything could be better. It doesn't mean it's realistically going to be, and I'm not going to spend my time fretting anymore over, you know, why it isn't as great as it should be. I'm just going to enjoy what I want to enjoy. I'll watch what I want to watch. you know, I'll seek out stuff that I hear is great, and I'll watch it, and I'll enjoy it. And that's just kind of where I'm at. And I'll watch old stuff when I want to watch old stuff for reviews or just for fun. So that's kind of where I'm at. Say, you know, I watch Raw, but it's usually while I'm recording, so it's on mute. So I'm not really burnt out. I like watching the pay-per-views because we get a few of us together to watch them every month. So that's fun for me. And, you know, SmackDown's been better than it was, so cool. NXT and Cruiserweight, I'll watch when I can. Same with Lucha and Ring of Honor, you know. So to me, wrestling's still great. I have a great time watching it. Meeting this group and having this group of peers to watch it with through the website, since a lot of us are in the same mindset. And it's a great place to still have debate and discussion when you want to and don't feel like it's like you want to punch the guy in the face, you know, even Jordan Duncan. You know, it's like even at the end of the day, it's like, whatever, it's cool. Like we know we're not always going to agree on everything. But when you go to the seas of like Twitter or blogs or message board, it's so, there's so, you know, much angriness and bitterness seeping through. And like you said, see the superiority of it, that's what turns you off. And the more and more that you shut that off, and I love the community aspect of being a wrestling fan, but I want to have a wall around it at times. So that's kind of where I'm at. So, you know, I love wrestling as much as ever. I'm just looking at it in a very different way for the first time in like 20 years than I had been. How about you, Nate?
Oh, first of all, let me speak on behalf of the listeners. You guys sound really old right now.
Oh, I hit 40 this year, Nate. My body is feeling it. My mind is feeling it.
It's the second kid. The second kid just makes you not have the energy to get into that.
Amen to that.
Yeah, I agree. That is true.
It saps the anger out of you at this point.
Well, let me say, though, I will concur. I will be the Morgan Freeman to your Robert De Niro and your Kevin Klein, and this show can be our Las Vegas.
Is that the Wild Hogs movie?
Oh, Wild Hogs was good, too.
Oh, was it? Never seen it.
We just started a Wild Hogs podcast.
I thought this was the Wild Hogs podcast, just not about the movie.
So a preview for the Henry Winkler, William Shatner show that they're pushing on NBC?
Yeah, that's no.
Terry Bradshaw.
Oh,
so wow. Bad.
Oh, I'm going to dig out of mothballs. Jesus. Sorry, God.
But I think I'm in the same boat. You know, I have severely cut back on my pull list, to use a comic turn of phrase. You know, the stuff that I really like, I'm there for. You know, I think Final Deletion was something I was extremely into. And the fact that they're planning on doing another one with the Decay, I'm excited to see what kind of craziness they do with that in TNA. This past week on Raw, you know, with the big title change, I'm excited to see what happens with that. And Kevin Owens finally getting this shot. You know, so there are things, the Cruiserweight Classic, Ring of Honor, there are things that still pique my interest as a wrestling fan, but I find that I have to kind of cut back on the consumption that I used to. You know, I just turned 39 my damn self, so you know I'm getting up there as well. And so time is valuable, and if you are going to sit down and watch everything that is offered, you've got either way too much time or you're hitting that good stuff, and I need some of that in my cup right now. So, like, on a typical week, I'll watch maybe the first hour of Raw and then go and do some work and come back and catch the last 30 minutes of Raw. I find that's a great way to digest that show. I'll watch SmackDown as background when I'm working on something else. I'll watch Impact while I'm editing the Kings of Sport. You know, I'll watch Ring of Honor online. So there's ways that I still consume the product, and I'm still out there and energized at points to engage with listeners and fans and fellow broadcasters and podcasters about the sport and the business. But there are things that just fall through the cracks that 10, 15 years ago, I would have been all about, you know, the G1. And I missed 90% of the G1. Mm-hmm. And 10, 15 years ago, I would be watching that, you know, nonstop. And now, while I know that the in-ring was good, and I think that might be the thing. In-ring wrestling probably has never been as good as it is right now. But where's the compelling stories? And I think, you know, that's something. You know, where's our NWO? Where's our Stone Cold? Where's Sting in the Raptors? You know, and granted, you know, we're starting to sound like, you know, the old timers at the end of the bar. But to me, that's what could, you know, get me to watch more. But as of right now, I'm happy with the intake that I'm getting right now from pro wrestling. You know, I've got my stuff that I dig, I've got my stuff that I enjoy, and you know, I don't try to extend myself too much beyond that.
Toddley?
I believe the psychologists have a term for it, and it's seasonal affective disorder. This is the time of year we've got too much shit going on. We got football coming up. We've got our fantasy drafts. We've got our kids back to school. It's just a busy time. Plus, there's a post-SummerSlam hangover. SummerSlam used to be a three-hour show, maybe 3.5 hours max if you'd have an overrun. We had a six-hour SummerSlam plus NXT Brooklyn the night before. Every fan I know watched both shows either in person or on the network. And I think it's just time to for a lot of us to do a mental health check. But we had the red-hot angle of all of a sudden Finn Balor's hurt. So we have this, oh, well, I guess I better watch then. But this is the time of year where we just kind of want to be casual fans and focus our energy on stuff we really need to give attention to. So personally, I'm really glad that there's the CWC because that never disappoints. It's going to be done in 3 weeks, I think. How many more weeks do we have? But I don't know. I'm not watching Raw all that regularly, but I'm sure glad I caught the last 15 minutes of it live the other night. And SmackDown's been solid, honestly. And it's easier for me to watch SmackDown because it's a tighter show. It's only two hours instead of three. But as a guy who doesn't watch ROH, just haven't figured out the right way to get into the product. I love the show that I saw live at Dallas, but I'm more of a guy who will click on links on YouTube and Twitter for that. And TNA, I was just there for Final Deletion, and I'm glad they're running with that. I'd love to see them go with that. I'd love to see the Dudley Boys or Team 3D show up and be a part of that. That would be awesome. I don't really have a lot of time for other things, so I'm happy that at least the guys, like you were saying, the guys who are up there are quality wrestlers. The matches are always going to be solid when you have guys like Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Cesaro, AJ Styles, and great tag teams too. I mean, I just wish you know, we're old and we always are going to play the nostalgia game. Plus, as far as free time, when I want to just turn on the network, I'm paralyzed by so many different options. I think if you're watching the network, you have to have a game plan. You have to have either you're watching it all the way chronologically from the beginning, like we have on the website, or, you know, a lot of people are in 2006 now because that's where our shows, where Place to Be Nation, the mothership is on right now. So a lot of people are watching it that way. But I don't know. I don't just pick a random show. I get overwhelmed by the choices. So and then I'll end up going to sleep. But I think I think it is just, we know that wrestling's good right now, and
it's almost too good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just too good, right? I mean, because it's like 20 years ago, we weren't getting this easily attainable high quality of in-ring action. Now it's like, all right, yeah, it was 4 stars. You know, it's kind of like, I mean, it's just ridiculous because of the saturation of high quality wrestling. And it's like mind-blowing to think what we would have done with ourselves back in 96, 97, 98, you know, just as a kid with so much free time and just watching the same 10 or 11 tapes over and over or whatever. Like, if I had this much stuff to watch, I think my mind would have exploded. I mean, you know, magazines were the outlet for a lot of it, but
like, do you realize we had as much wrestling from the WWE between Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday? In those 4 days, we had as much wwrestling concentrated in that time period than we'd have in a month back in the day.
Right.
When it was just Nitro and Raw.
And tack on whatever Wednesday. You know, I mean, it's like NXT and Cruiserweight as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absurd. Nate, have you had this like malaise before? Or is this kind of the first time you're going through some of this?
This is really the first time because I think I always had the standby of TNA. And, you know, you can make the jokes and whatnot about TNA. But I would say up until the last 2 or 3 years, even though the booking was probably terrible and nonsensical, you always had an AJ Styles. You always had Christopher Daniels, Frank Kazarian, Sting. You know, you had a good mix of talent. And now, you know, Final Deletion aside, which right. To me is still the most entertaining thing I've seen this year, the roster, while it's a quality roster, the star power isn't there. And TNA, while I watch it, it's more out of habit than, you know, oh, AJ Styles and Magnus had a hell of a match tonight, you know. And so I'd say my enthusiasm level for the WWE is probably the same or maybe even just a tad bit more intrigued because of some of the guys that have come in to the company in the last year or so. But everything else, like my enthusiasm level for TNA is dipped. My enthusiasm level for ROH is dipped. I haven't even really gotten into Lucha Underground this season, whereas, you know, in season one, I was all about it. And so I'd say it's not so much WWE, but just everything else, the level is kind of decreased in terms of my interest or my stamina, as Donald Trump would say, for that type of wrestling.
Steve, have you ever done this before? Like, had this malaise before? I mean, I know we talked about briefly that you had, but I don't know. Is it yearly? Is it often? But also, if you didn't have this stuff, podcasts, writing for the site, you know, like the group we have. I mean, we had the blog and other stuff before, but this, like, activity level, do you think, you know, how much does that buoy where you're at still? Like, would it be even lower, you think?
I think it would be more specialized if it was, if the podcasting stuff was not there. During that kind of time, like, I'd say like 04, 06-ish, I was pretty much out of WWE, more towards circumstances where I was going back to school. So on Monday nights, I was in class. And I just kind of, you know, didn't have interest. And I also didn't have any local friends who were into wrestling. And that's a big part of my experience is being able to enjoy it with somebody else. Like, I went to a show last Friday in a local Masonic temple in Oshkosh that I had no intention of going to, but I merely went because my friend was going and he asked me to literally 15 minutes before bell time. And it was more just to hang out with him. And, I, you know, that's enjoyable to me. So without it, during that time period from 04 to 06, I was really into Ring of Honor, which was easier to do where you just get your DVDs every once in a while and you can watch them. You know, it wasn't based on time where you had to watch them within a week to know what was going on. And then TNA I would watch when – was Nate, was it on the computer before Fox Sports or was that in between Fox Sports and Spike?
Yeah, that was the in-between time because that was when Raven was the champ, I think.
Yeah, and Joe was starting up and you get Austin Aries on there and Roderick Storm popped up.
It went pay-per-view, Fox Sports – Internet Spike, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would hit the computer up, you know, whenever I needed to watch that. And it was very, very specialized viewing. And I think I would do more of that. You know, shout out to my guy at IPP Videos. I get a lot of good stuff that I pay for from him every now and then of old, you know, kind of old Japanese, old Lucha stuff. I'd probably lean more towards that. I would still watch wrestling. It would just be a lot different looking than what it is today.
How about you, Todd? Same question.
I don't know. Maybe I went through this when my kids started being born, 2006 to 2009. So I just didn't have the time. But the network has kind of changed things for me. I feel like I have to get the value out of the network. So I'll make sure to watch those pay-per-views every month. And back then, I would read about them. And if it was a good show, I'd see it eventually. Or I'd get the DVD on clearance at Best Buy. But nowadays with the pay-per-views as part of your deal, and you don't want to miss out, you never know what's going to happen. I tend to watch them all, and so I'll maybe be a little less enthused for the weekly show, but I'll make sure to catch up with a main event or the go-home Raw before that. So it has happened before in my life, but I think having the network, I just feel like maybe I'm going to miss something if I don't watch this particular pay-per-view.
I think it's interesting, too, because you hear a lot of complaining about the oversaturation of WWE products. But in a way, it's almost like you either want to have not a lot, right, so you can build anticipation. So, whatever, 1998 Raw, per se, where you were dying to get to the next week, or 97. Or you maybe want to go completely the other way, where it makes some of your stuff missable. But in a way, you're probably ensuring that more people see something, you know? So it's like, I don't have to see Raw every week, but I'll probably watch something WWE related, and that's brand awareness. And maybe I'm only watching SmackDown because Raw is too long, but I may see a clip on SmackDown of Raw, and then I end up watching the next week. So it's almost like the oversaturation hurts in some ways, but I can see the argument where it helps that they're everywhere and there's so much to watch. But they don't make it I don't think this is on purpose, but in a way, it's just not must-see to the point where you can miss things and still keep up, but you're always having the awareness because there's always something on. So you're more likely to stumble across or be bored one night and check it out, and there's not multiple nights, you know, a lot of nights where there's no WWE in your face.
And they are all over YouTube.
Right,
WWE is in your face with YouTube right after the match. There's highlights from the match or there's a clip, and there's the top 10 results from Raw or the top 10 moments from Raw and SmackDown. So you can kind of keep up what's going on with just 5-10 minutes here or there browsing through YouTube. And they have tens of millions of subscribers. I have to imagine it's actually making them money too.
Right. Oh, I'm sure. Oh, they wouldn't.
I mean, on YouTube subscribers.
Right. All right. So I think it was a good discussion. Again, I think we'll do it again maybe in like January as we hit the Rumble and see if we're kind of out of the malaise. Does Mania season perk us up, or how do we do with the year end stuff? So we'll take another temperature gauge in December. I mean, in January, if the show's still going. If not, well, you can check with us elsewhere. So why don't we go ahead and take a break? We'll be back. We'll talk some WWE proper. We'll talk about our new Universal Champion, some of the fallout from SummerSlam and whatnot. And then later on tonight, we're going to be previewing Lucha Underground's season number 3. We're going to talk a little Death Before Dishonor. We're going to look at the Battle of Los Angeles, which is coming up. So a lot to talk about here on Clotheslines and Headlines. We'll be right back after this. I don't want to know. If you're playing me, keep it on the low. 'Cause my heart can't take it anymore.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you're subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Just head to iTunes today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be podcast feed, the PWO PTBN feed, PTBN Pop, and of course the Kevin Kelly Show feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Some really great stuff. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. Thanks for being a fan of professional wrestling. More importantly, thanks for being a fan and supporter of the Place to Be Nation.
I don't believe this. I get rid of those two evil maniacs who try to ruin my show. And I get two evil guests who are trying to ruin my show.
Fang, just who came up with the stupid idea of getting Space Ghost a talk show in the first place? How they gave his own
show to Tad Goldstool. And he gave all right, we are back here on episode number 6 of Clotheslines and Headlines. Myself, Nate, Steve, Todd, sticking around here to talk a little bit of WWE. And it was a pretty busy couple weeks in the world of Stamford, Connecticut. Of course, we had NXT and SummerSlam, followed by Raw, all in Brooklyn. Ugh, and those fans, God forbid, they just shut the fuck up. But here we are. Finn Balor won the Universal title, became the first Universal Champion, knocking off Seth Rollins cleanly in a match that half the fans in the arena paid attention to. The other half were busy crying as the entitled hipsters that they are. But here we are. So Balor, of course, during the match, ended up injuring his shoulder pretty badly. Here's the latest on him. Finn Balor indicated he would not be able to return in 4 months after undergoing shoulder surgery last week. Before that comment, we had heard 4 to 6 months, but there was concern backstage that he'd be out of action even longer. Torn labrums can have talent up for 8 to 9 months. There was some hope that he'd be back in time for Mania, but it's still early to tell. And that's from PWMania.com. So, of course, it was a torn labrum that forced him the next night to forfeit the title. That led to kind of a mini tournament, culminated this past Monday with a 4-way match between Kevin Owens, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and Big Cass. And that was, of course, won by Kevin Owens. So we're going to talk all about this. Let's start at the top. You know, Nate, you know, we previewed SummerSlam on here 2 weeks ago. I think we're pretty confident about Balor winning. He won. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being you don't care, 0 being, oh, God, you're crushed. Where are you at as far as, like, being upset about what happened to Finn? And how do you think this affects him long term? I mean, he's not young, right? So
No. An
injury like this can hurt. And, you know, Vince is not known to be the most, I'll say forgiving, but understanding when it comes to stuff like this. Like, you can get the tag of it being injury prone really quickly with him. So where were you kind of on the depression scale about Balor's injury? And do you think, how badly do you think it affects him long term with the company?
I'd say probably around a 4 or 5, somewhere right in the middle, you know, because I was not devastated that he got hurt. Of course, I was disappointed because I was looking forward to seeing where they were going to go with this character and with this guy come Monday night. And then to find out that he got injured and, you know, just from the people I've talked to that have knowledge about it, even if he has this miraculous Wolverine John Cena-like healing streak within him, you know, WrestleMania is still going to be cutting it close. So who knows when we'll see this guy again in a WWE ring as an active competitor. And it can go either way in terms of how does this help or hurt his career. You know, like you mentioned, the guy's 35, so he is right now in the peak or the prime of his career. And I think absence from a fan standpoint could make the heart grow fonder. It could end up being maybe a better thing for Finn in the long run. But in terms of what the company has in store for him and their plans and the way they see him, I think this could be a detriment. I think we got to look at the circumstances, though. And I know Seth Rollins feels terrible, but we got to get rid of the buckle bomb. And yes, this might be a knee-jerk reaction. And yes, I've got some skin in the fight because of that damn buckle bomb. We don't get any more Sting matches.
I think it was 50-50 on this one, though. I feel like it wasn't. I mean, it's a dumb move. The move itself was the reason.
Yeah.
I don't think Balor took the bump.
It was,
right?
Yeah, Balor. Yeah, you could tell he was trying to brace his fall, and that's how his shoulder got in there. But just at the best case circumstance, you know, with the best case scenario, what are you gaining from this? And it's a setup move. You know, it's not even his finish. So I think maybe that's something they need to look at. But I thought. Overall, man, just looking at SummerSlam as a whole, just from where I was seeing it, you know, obviously you had a different perspective being there in the arena, but I thought that they probably should have ended with that Universal Championship match, and I'm still not going to get used to saying Universal Championship, but I thought that would have been a much better ending than the Brock Orton match that we saw on the network.
Well, especially after the no contest Reigns Rusev, to have just kind of the CF that Brock and Randy turned into, with kind of a lot of eyes were on it, but it was more of a what's going on. Boy, I would have liked to seen Finn get all that energy from the crowd as being the headliner. I mean, match order matters, and if you're closing the show, that was going to be a bigger moment, I think, at least as far as moving up. But in hindsight, you know, maybe it's a good idea that it wasn't, because we didn't know. We had no idea he was going to get hurt. But
do you guys?
Just from the standpoint though of establishing this new title, I think it would have done a bit of a better job to have that close, because you had both title matches kind of follow behind Reigns and also fall behind Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton and that Travis Shamrockery that we saw out there. I thought they didn't do themselves any favors with the whole belt kerfluffle, which is a silly word, but not as silly as a Universal Championship. But
the Reigns Rusev thing cracked me up, because you know, you go within like seconds on Twitter and everywhere else, like people, fans complaining that they were going on, you know, the U.S. title's going on ahead of the other ones. It's only because it's Reigns, blah blah blah. And then we get a bullshit, you know, fuckity do where there's no actual match, and everyone was promised a match, we didn't get a match, and then you take it back even to Raw. Oh, I can't believe they're giving away the pay-per-view match on Raw. What idiots. It was a great match. They could have had this at SummerSlam. Then they're bitching about the match placement. Then the match doesn't happen. Oh, we didn't get this match. Oh, my God, this is going to be a great match. It's like, that was my breaking point. Like, oh, my God, shut up. Like, you know, if someone they liked in that slot, like last year when it was Cesaro and Kevin Owens, I didn't hear people complaining that they went on above Cena and Rollins. No, because it was guys they liked. And it's like,
I remember that. You were hearing the opposite. You're hearing, oh, my God, they put Cesaro and Owens in the death spot.
What does this mean?
Right, yeah, so it's the death spot when it's guys you like, but when it's not, you know, it's they're getting next to top. It's, oh, God. this is why I'm checking out. But anyway, do you guys think the crowd was burnt? And, Steve, you were there, and you can lead on this one if you want. But do you think the crowd was burnt out because of Cena Styles or because of the show length and what it entailed? Like, the crowd is off the hook for Cena Styles, which was a fantastic match. If that closed to the show, does it have that same amount of engagement and heat from the fans? Or was anything at the end of that show destined to be in that position?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think that if it was Cena and Styles, it would still have gotten a mega reaction, not as much as where it was placed in the card. but the match was so good that it could have overcome kind of the general melee that fell across the crowd for a couple reasons. You know, when there was, I can't remember the placement of one of the women's matches that wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. Was it the six woman one that was placed after that?
It was later. I think it was
the six women. They did okay. They actually did it
I argued that it was a better match than the Divas Revolution one at SummerSlam last year. It just it flowed better. Right. But I think it would have that if it was the Finn Balor Seth Rollins match, even without the belt stop, I think that would have suffered. I mean, I definitely think Brock and Orton suffered at that point. And plus, you know, the fact that no one knew what the heck was going on. The length of the show did do it for me. You know, there are a lot of people who are out, partying it up before the show. We were doing it a little bit, but we got there as the doors opened. We came in a little about probably like half hour between the pre-show, and that was a lot of start the show, stop the show. There's a match, then there's a half an hour or nothing. The lights are all off in there. You're getting a little tired.
Eating all that popcorn.
Yeah, it's bottomless. And
you got Jon Stewart.
That killed the show. What percentage do you think saw both shows? Live.
Judging by the Nakamura shirts, I'd say a good amount. You could see it carry over. No, I'd say it was I can't imagine many people traveling there to just do NXT. Maybe people that were priced out of SummerSlam. I would say, I mean, this is a complete guess. I don't know, like 70% of the people at NXT probably went to SummerSlam.
Because last year you had Ring of Honor on the same day as NXT, and those tickets went on sale way before they even announced that there was going to be an NXT, because that wasn't a thing at that point, doing the show before a major event. You had a couple thousand people at the Ring of Honor show, so there was a little bit more of a turnover then. But yeah, and that was a good point, Justin. It might not have come across on television. The amount of the Red Strong Style Nakamura shirts,
the amount
of money with that, we counted just in one section. I think there was 30 just in one section.
It was crazy. It was like the NWO in 1997. That's how rampant it was with that shirt. On that night.
Yeah, that is, not us, blowing smoke. That is legit. We actually counted. It was amazing.
So, Todd, what do you think as far as Balor's future from this? I think it's going to hurt because, I mean, I know you get the absence make the heart grows fond and everything else, but, he's never going to get the push he got now. He just isn't because it doesn't really exist. It's harder to get a better push than he got in his first couple weeks. So
he came in on top. I mean, it establishes him as far as fans may think he should contend as soon as he comes back. But so much can happen in a year. A year is a long time in wrestling, especially when you have 2 weekly shows. Mm-hmm. How many pay-per-views are there now with the brand split? So
a lot.
It can be a lot. We may have some other guys get established. We may have Joe come up and take his place as far as a roster spot or
That slot itself just may not exist.
So yeah, I hope he gets over as much as he did initially, but also he's fighting the hands of time. He's 35, and big time major injury could take a long, long time. Look at Hideo Itami is not as over as he was when he left in NXT. I mean, to just use somebody. Alberto Del Rio is gone, so there's a roster spot opening up over there. SmackDown.
Yes, there is. We'll see how they fill that one, although it shouldn't be hard. I think any of us could probably step in and give what he was given. So, Tal, we'll stick with you here to transition to Monday night, though. So Kevin Owens surprisingly wins the title. There's conflicting stories out there right now. One saying he didn't know and that no one knew that he was winning besides Reigns, Rollins, and Triple H, that they came up with the finish and didn't tell Owens so they could have a genuine reaction to him winning his first world title. There's a story that it was well known before that, and that's not true. So those are kind of the competing stories out there right now. Of course, a lot of hand-wringing consternation out in the wrestling Twitter and message board and blog and Facebook verse when Triple H, of course, helped Owens win. Owens didn't really win the match on his own. Triple H took out Reigns, and then he took out Rollins, and Owens just climbed over and pinned him. Many felt that it didn't make Owens look very strong coming out of the gate. They felt that Triple H has to, you know, be the guy no matter what. I mean, in my mind, going back to the opening segment, I like Kevin Owens. I'm happy for him. He seemed happy. His kid seemed happy. You know, it was a great moment, and he's going to be featured as a world champion. Seth Rollins had his nuts cut off, too. You know what? He still put on a lot of great matches and was on ton of TV a ton, and whatever the returns were, he still got the spotlight, whether Triple H was there with him or not. So I also think Kevin Owens is a heel. His whole gimmick is that he doesn't care how he wins. He's a chicken shit. He doesn't have to be a chicken shit, but he can be. He just wants to win as many matches and be as high in the card as he can to provide for his family. Like, that's been his thing.
It's consistent with his character.
Think of NXT when he jumped his best friend and destroyed it. You know, like, all the stuff he's done has always been smarmy and slimy. And, like, why all of a sudden does he need to be booked like Goldberg and, like, destroy someone to win his world title? Like, no, Kevin Owens is a creep. He's a dick. He's, like, he's doing whatever he can to, you know, his heart's in the right place, but the way he goes about things isn't always the best. So in his mind, it's all justified. So he doesn't care that Triple H won the belt for him. He's the champion. That means his paycheck is better, and, you know, and his kid can call him champion. Like, that's his goal. So I think it's 100% consistent with his character, which is why I was so caught off guard by everyone just flipping out about how it was presented. It's like, it's not real. It's not real. He can still be strong. I mean, not to be condescending, but it's like, he can still be a strong champion just because he didn't win clean on his own. Like, it's wrestling. That's what heels do.
And how many times did that happen in the Attitude Era, and it was perfectly fine?
Right.
It's because it's Triple H, and people can deny it all they want. If it's anyone but Triple H, I don't think it's as big of a deal.
Honestly, though, okay, the one thought I had, I mean, I had many thoughts, but the thought I had that's maybe a different take on it, I'm really happy that Owens is the champ. And yes, it's consistent with his character, but do we have to put the pedigree over that strong as it can kill Roman Reigns? It can kill Seth Rollins. What if he had come up with a sledge? I would have absolutely no problem with it. I mean, and that would still, it would do the same thing if
it to Owens and Owens. Back.
Right. Yeah. Right. What purpose does it have to make Triple H look stronger than everybody else at this point? When we know in real life, he is stronger just because of who he is up in the company.
And that goes back to my opening segment comments too, that it's just, that's what it is. I mean, if you're,
it is,
you know, it's like, if you're upset about it, it's one thing, whatever, then I hate to do the don't watch, but like, you kind of forfeit the right to be angry or surprised. I don't say angry, but the right to be like, oh my God, I can't believe they did that. Triple H like owns the fucking company, and he's going to be around forever. And this is how it is in that company. That is the structure of the company, whether it's smart, whether it's right, completely debatable, and probably not, but it is what it is at this point, and it's not going to change anytime soon. So,
story-wise, what do you think's going on? I mean, what do you think? Where do you think they're going from this? Let's see how it plays out here, folks. Yeah. What's going on? I mean, is there a NXT power play going on here or something, or you know, what's the
on
angle?
Air? You mean, or backstage?
Yeah, no, okay. On air. That's what I'm interested to see. What's going on? Why? You know, why did he suddenly lose faith in Rollins?
Well, I think that before WrestleMania, there was already some losing faith, he and Steph, with Rollins due to the injury. You know, when he came back, Steph was kind of with him. And Owens had always, since he was brought up to the roster, was always kind of in the ear of the authority. He'd kind of show up and be like, hey, you know, what do you need? He'd be in the background a little bit. So that part made sense to me that Triple H would go with Owens. I don't know where it's going to go next. I honestly don't think they know where it's going to go next. And that's one compliment I do want to pay them. And it's not often that, you know, wrestling fans praise booking of the WWE. But SummerSlam was 8 days before the title change. Mm-hmm. In one day, not even a day, you know, a few hours.
Everything had to get scrapped.
Every single thing. Your top guy that you just put your new belt on got scrapped. You already, you know, well, this is through your own fault in making the brand split. You have less of a roster to be able to utilize to do the rebooking. And within a couple hours, they had a show that was, you know, decently compelling, and it raised up, you know, a brand new guy into the main event level. And then, the, you know, the next week, you know, the show as a whole wasn't that great, but the focus had to be on the main event at that point. And they put on a great four-way match with a surprise ending where a guy who everyone wanted to see win the belt won. You know, there is no way Cass was going to win. You know, he got, you know, big heat. It's, you know, Roman Reigns, they've done that. They knew what the response would be if they just put it back on him. And Seth Rollins, you just had the whole story was that Finn Balor beat him. So why would you have him win, you know, just from a kayfabe perspective?
And, right. You know, like, you could have had him win.
You could have just had him win and beat Finn Balor to begin with.
Yeah.
So I think that the fact in, you know, in 7-8 days they came up with this should be lauded, not shat upon. And now, where they go next will be where we can judge.
That crowd was so hot for that match, too. It was great to see. I mean, it really was. It was very hot. At least it came across on TV to me. Yeah. Do you think, just as far as, you know, you're trying to strengthen the whole brand, trying to tell different stories and take, you know, where does Reigns go from here? Would it have been a bigger deal or maybe better for Reigns and the product if Rusev had cost him instead of Triple H? I mean, it fits with Triple H getting revenge on him, getting back at him. But, you know, where does Reigns go from here? Back to the Rusev feud?
That's going to be interesting because I tend to think that they may go back to that. But
I think it's done.
They're all scrambling. And to Steve's point, they haven't just been scrambling for the past 8 days. They've been scrambling for the past couple months, ever since Reigns got popped. You know, by the wellness policy,
that's true.
Everything got thrown into a state of flux because, you know, I've talked to certain people and certain guys are supposed to have titles right now on certain brands. And that is not what we're currently seeing. And so everything has had to be put in this state of turnover. And so I think they've done a pretty decent job thinking on their feet with this, given the fact that you've got a brand split in the middle of this and you've got, you know, your pay-per-views are spread out now. So they had to have a champion. And I think out of all of the options, Owens is probably the best way to go. But here's where I'm of two minds, because while I am happy for Owens the person, in terms of the character aspect, that's where I have this, this wait and see attitude, because I am one who is skeptical about, you know, your boy Triple H, JR. I am one who is skeptical. And I'm just kind of sitting back like, you know what, I'm not going to shit on this right now, but I'm just going to see where they go, because there's a couple different ways they can go with this. They could reboot the Authority, which I don't think I'd be too keen on. This could be some type of NXT takeover, pardon the pun, or this could just be Triple H being Triple H and right, settling some personal scores, which has nothing to do with the ongoing story of Kevin Owens. And so it's going to be up to them. You know, they've got this great moment. And you could tell by the response on social media. You could tell by the response in that arena that night. People are intrigued by this. People are appreciative of this. And so now that you've got these eyes and ears maybe perked up a little bit, the question is, what are they going to do with it? And so whenever you've got them with their backs against the wall where they've got to come out with something great for the next show, That's an interesting thing to me. You know, we talked earlier in the first segment about where our interest levels are at. And things like this, when they pop up, they are interesting to me, both from a on-screen perspective, but also from behind the scenes, how do we put this show together type of deal.
If anything, it's all this is sprucing up what's normally a very boring fall. So, I mean, between the curiosity over the brand-specific pay-per-views, the split in general, all the stuff with Owens, you know, the stuff on SmackDown, will AJ Styles win the title? So if anything, it's making for a more interesting fall than normal. So I'll say that.
Plus, we have the Cruiserweights coming on to Raw in a couple weeks, and that's going to be great. That first hour, well, we assume it's the first hour. I mean, have they come out and said that?
Not. I think that it might be interspersed throughout the roster, I think, where it's just part of the show.
Well, and Owens has proven he can have a great match against Adrian Neville or Roman Reigns or anybody on the roster, so...
Yeah, hopefully they just let him run with it for a while and see. So before we move on, any final thoughts on Balor or Owens from anyone?
Did anybody see what happened with the ESPN guy talking shit about,
yeah, let's talk about
Owens
that.
And his kid?
Yes.
Is this a work?
No.
I don't know.
No.
No, it's, I mean, because ESPN's kind of been given the company line that, well, we're promoting. We have a deal with WWE. We've got a section for it on our website. Coachman is obviously the go-between, where he's an expert on WWE and working for ESPN. But we had – is his name Amin El-Hassan, something like that?
I've never heard of him. I literally never heard of him, but he seems like a hot take kind of guy.
He is a hot take kind of guy. He was a guy who was very defensive of – as a Sacramento guy, he was a guy that was defending George Karl when George Karl didn't exactly work out in Sacramento. And, you know, George Karl would come out and say, well, I wish this guy had played better the next night, and that guy wasn't even in the game. So for me, that was the only reason I knew that guy is because he took up for George Karl, who used to be an ESPN employee. As a Sacramento Kings fan, I'm just very defensive about anybody who takes a stand against the Kings or, you know, is pro Lakers in the 2002 NBA semifinals. But yeah, so this guy comes out and makes fun of Owens' kid's reaction. Kevin Owens, really Kevin Steen, his son, Owen Steen, is autistic like my son, same age. So I relate a lot to Kevin Owens. Plus, I have short hair and a beard and a gut. So... you know, really kind of got my
vouch. I met you.
Yeah, I do. I'm not as thick. I'm actually a little taller, I think, but
much more handsome.
And a much nicer looking belt.
Yes.
Borderline. Yeah. My belt does not look like, what do you call it? Fruit roll up. So, yeah, I hate that's going on and he's making fun of the product at the same time, in which ESPN, you're kind of promoting it too.
Even beyond that, it's just a cheap shot. It's like, I don't get the people obsessed with trying to prove that wrestling's fake. Like, do they really think it's not known? Like, it's just a show, man. I feel like saying, was your kid happy when you got fucking promoted to ESPN or whatever the hell you're doing? Yeah, it's like, that's the bullshit you're saying on air is just as fake as anything that Dirty's doing. It's
just
like,
a scripted.
You know, it's absurd. It's like, yeah, we know. We get it. We're not idiots. And regardless, you know, even if it's fake and the kid's buying in, his father just reached, like, the highest possible level in the job he's in. So even if he's not believing on the level of kayfabe, he's still proud and happy because his dad has, like, reached the pinnacle of his career. Like, why wouldn't he be excited for it?
He's going to get a nice-ass pay raise.
Yeah, you know, it's like, what the hell, guy? Just like, all right, you need hits that bad? He's got 80-something thousand followers. Like, all right, cool guy, we get it. Wrestling's fake. You know, it's like, and then he didn't even stand down when he got called out. He's basically like,
yeah, he doubled down.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it really rubbed me wrong, but some of the wrestling fans' takes are what you'd expect, too.
Oh,
not necessarily doing us any favors. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you see that story, Nate? Do you have any thoughts on it?
And this whole thing with ESPN is just interesting to me from a broadcasting standpoint, because there's a couple different factions within the mothership. Like, you know, obviously you've got, you know, your Coachmans and your Grishams and your Beals that are all in. Then you've got, you know, the people that are kind of towing that middle ground. And then you got people that, for whatever reason, just seem to look down on wrestling fans and wrestling in general, and also look down on ESPN being in bed with WWE. And I think Amin El-Hassan fits into that last category. And so you've got these people, and broadcasters, especially at ESPN, by nature tend to bloviate and gas bag, as Dan Levitard would say, and this guy is one of the kings of the gas bag game. And so this did not surprise me at all, you know, trying to show that I'm smarter and cooler than these wrestling fans. But it's really, really interesting, because there was something a couple months ago where Coachman had gotten into some deal on First Take, and Chris Cruz from WCW of all places came out and started shutting him down. And so it's like this marriage, this I'm not even gonna say it's a marriage. It's a really long one night stand between Vince McMahon and John Skipper is just fascinating to me.
All right, let's quickly talk Backlash just for a second, because we're not going to talk again before the show, but it also will spiral into another sidebar, which is the what happened on Talking Smack last week. So let's start there, because it did lead to something. So last week on Talking Smack, Miz showed up on set, confronted Daniel Bryan, cut the promo of his life. I'm sure anyone listening to the show has probably heard it. Fantastic promo. I'm sure, you know, I'm of the belief, obviously it was scripted. I think it's part of the story. I don't think they would have allowed it to go on the way it did. And, you know, there was, oh, Daniel Bryan looked really angry and the stuff. No, it's if it's on TV, it's planned. But I do think Miz was speaking from the heart. I do think he believed everything he said, and I do believe there's a lot of truth to what he said. So the promo was fantastic. It led to a segment this week. We're now setting him and Dolph Ziggler up for a match at Backlash. Steve, what did you think of the promo? You know, was it Miz's best? And do you think this is setting up an eventual in-ring return for Daniel Bryan?
I think it leaves open the possibility for an in-ring return by Daniel Bryan if he is capable of doing it. And secondly, if the WWE allows it, even if he is capable of doing it. I thought his promo was really good. I was kind of shocked that people thought that it was a quote-unquote shoot, seeing that Bryan and Miz have been doing this exact same thing on TV since the original NXT, they were paired up together. It's the same thing they've done constantly. I mean, they did it during the draft. Just recently, they had that. Hey, why did you pick me? And then, I didn't really want to pick you. I picked the Intercontinental title.
Right.
You know, like literally just weeks ago, they had this exact same thing. I do like these, like the Talking Smack show. I brought this up when we were talking.
It's an awesome show.
Yeah, when we were talking the draft, I had said how I was watching it on the network because I just was not in the room with the TV. And there were a lot of kind of more offs, just more ad-libbing. Mick Foley would say when he would do his best is they'd get little bullet points about what he was supposed to go across and then, kind of be able to be himself from there and just cover those points. And the draft show, they had like an interaction with Owens, Cass, and Enzo, which was clearly mostly just them ad-libbing and having fun. So I think that, hey, The Miz is now a trained actor. We can scoff at his in-ring ability. The guy is studying to be an actor, and he acted with Daniel Bryan, and they played it a little close to the hip. And, Daniel Bryan's going to walk off the set because of something Miz says. Like, he's not going to get up in his face if it really did hurt him. Like, Daniel Bryan's not going to be some guy who walks away from Bryan could kill him. Like, he's a mixed martial artist, right? So, it's exciting for Miz, I think. People are talking positively about him since the, Maurice coming back, for him doing some of these type of promos. And when has anybody ever talked well about Miz? My friend went to high school with him. No one has ever talked positively about Miz.
And I don't doubt, though, that a lot of the ire that came across in that promo is from a very real place. Oh, I mean, there's a chip on his shoulder, because a lot of people, blame him for the downturn of WrestleMania 27 that time. I mean, he was given a title run and it was pretty blah. So, he's got a lot of people. This is a work shoot, but still it was compelling. And I hope it comes back. It comes back with Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 33.
Well, rumors are starting to come out that, and don't forget, he was cleared by his doctors. It's the WWE doctors. They never cleared him. So rumors are that maybe they've gone more testing and they're starting to feel more comfortable with where he's at. I mean, I think the ultimate payoff to Miz's title reign and the story is Bryan just squashing him at Mania in like 10 seconds. To open the show or something like that. And it kind of brings, Bryan's story to a close. Like, he was in the IC title match. He was IC champ at 31 before his career ended. And now he comes back 2 years later, wins the title, and kind of ends this half a decade long feud with The Miz. Like, there's so many nice story points that can come to a conclusion. Whereas even if he's not prepared to be a full-time guy again, like if he could just do like come in, dropkick Miz, do the running dropkick or the knee to the head and beat him. Like if he could do that, it would probably be worth the time and investment and probably the best possible payoff to Miz other than having someone new, like a Samoa Joe or a Nakamura. He has to come up and just destroy him in their debut.
Honky Tonk Man kind of thing. Right.
And many people thought we may get that with Cruz at SummerSlam, but I didn't see it because I didn't think
there was that. Not that over yet. And last night we had Miz starting a program with Dolph. Mm-hmm. And, Miz was challenged to a match and he started to get up and then he cautiously backed away. And I saw people, here we go again, criticizing, everybody and their different takes. But I saw people getting mad at Miz, like saying all that goodwill you had last week is all shot because you backed down. This is so consistent with the character,
right,
that he's portraying. He's safe. He's taking care of, you know, it's all work, you idiots.
Everyone
man.
Has to win every time, everything, and whatever. Nate, any thoughts on this before we wrap up the segment?
Just real quick, like, I think talking smack is a great addition to the network. It reminds me of a little bit of the reaction show Impact used to have, where you had people in character, but pretty much just ad-libbing and improvising.
And SmackDown as a whole feels like that.
Than Raw. I think, much more so than Raw. And I think that this was a really good thing for Miz. And I think I've talked every week that we've had this show about how thin the SmackDown roster is to me. And so there's opportunities for guys to kind of become cornerstones of this brand. And I think Miz is set up in a position to be a cornerstone of the blue brand. Now, does that mean he eventually gets a matchup with Daniel Bryan? I don't know, you know, because that's all going to come down to, can he physically do it? And will the WWE feel comfortable allowing him to do it? But I definitely think this could be a positive for Miz. And, like, to me, Miz and AJ Styles are consistently the best parts of SmackDown each week.
Agreed.
What'd you guys think of Rhino and Heath Slater yesterday?
Awesome. I mean,
on SmackDown,
they've struggled. They've struck gold with Slater, unbelievably enough. So I mean, it's the old New Age Outlaws thing, right? That has kept throwing shit at the wall, and now it's stuck. And I'm hoping they take advantage of this guy. I mean, him and Rhino winning the tournament would be. I mean, it sucks. You hate to see that for American Alpha, but I think Usos costing Alpha the match, and Slater and Rhino winning the belts would be, I think it's the way to go. I think Slater deserves it. He's working his ass off. And Rhino is this kind of like whatever pal, like hanging around the trailer park is just tremendous.
Yeah. And the thing is, they don't have to hold them forever. You know, the stip isn't Heath has to hold the belt for so many days and he gets a contract. He just has to win. So I think you could do something where they win and they get maybe a month run and then they drop it at the next show.
Or a 2-day run.
Or a 2-day run. Yeah. But I think that Heath, to me, man, like, you guys were there in Brooklyn, the Heath Slater chance breaking out. Like, yep. Heath Slater has the potential to be this kind of dark horse fan favorite, man, just because I think people are into the character and into kind of the absurdity of, like, I almost got a little bit of a Final Deletion vibe from the exclusive at the trailer park with Renee and Heath and what's his wife, Brandy?
It's Beulah. They had a Beulah callback. And Rhino eating Cheese Whiz.
Yes, the Cheese Whiz. Yeah, it was cool. It was cool.
It was like during the Dr. Match, D TNT skit. I mean, that's where I saw the most compared to.
And all the fans in the crowd with Heath's kids. We had a Heath's kids section on SmackDown. I'm so happy for the guy to finally have his moment.
That's great. All right, real quick, we're going to wrap up here and move on, but I'm going to quickly roundtable, no explanation, just who you think. What we have for Backlash so far is like five matches announced. Let's do who will be the first ever SmackDown Women's Champion. We got Becky, we got Naomi, Natalya, Nikki, Carmella, and Alexa. We'll go Todd, Nate, Steve right around the table for all of these.
Becky Lynch.
Naomi, she's got the glow like Bruce Leroy.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, that's mine. I will say Becky Lynch for the feel good moment.
All right, I'm going to say Nikki just because it's Nikki.
No, that's
good. I also think I kind of like the feisty SmackDown Women's Division. I feel like they have a real chip on their shoulder about how they're looked at versus the Raw Division, and I feel like they're working hard like to build. I like that there's depth to it, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Whereas the women right now on Raw kind of have the one thing going on. On SmackDown, it seems like there's a little more depth to the division because there's no real alpha dog. So I think it's kind of cool, and they all seem to really be embracing like the opportunity and stepping up. So it's been kind of different. The Ziggler and Miz's title reign, Todd.
No, Miz continues in a Miz-like fashion.
I'm on Team Coward with this one. Miz gets the win.
Yep, make it a clean sweep. Ziggler is just not there. A little bit further than Cruz, but
not quite. Bray and Orton, Todd.
Randy Orton in a squash.
Ooh, neat.
Orton's got to get some heat back, so yeah, give me a Viperville.
Steven?
Definitely Orton with the 10 staples in his head.
and
that was gross, by the way. We didn't talk about how disgusting that was, even
so
live.
So gross. I'm going to go with Orton as well. Yeah, I think he needs to win. Although Bray at some point, right, needs to do something. But
or some kind of angle, something right. Big with a reunification of the family. I mean, Eric Rowan's just kind of dumped out of the family now. Is Bray alone?
That's what it seems like for now. I guess Harper will be back someday.
Oh, Bo Dallas, line one, pick up.
I think Bo Dallas is closer to jail than he is to being in the Wyatt family. But
that's a beautiful story. Bray goes to the prison and recruits his brother.
It'd be like the night of. Nobody's watching the night of.
Chad Campbell popped. SmackDown Tag Tournament. We have Usos, American Alpha, Hype Bros, and then Rhino and Slater. I guess are all four matches on the pay per view. Or are we getting the semis next week on SmackDown?
Yeah, the semis are on SmackDown.
Okay. So just the final. So, Todd, who are our champions at the end of this thing?
Looking at it from now, I think your hypothesis is the most plausible. I think that the Usos are on their way to a turn, and they end up costing American Alpha because they're jealous because American Alpha beats them next week and advances to the finals. And that gives Heath Slater and Rhino a beautiful moment at Backlash.
I think it has to be that, especially the Hype Bros being the other semi. So Rhino and Slater at least make it to the pay-per-view. That's a gimme. What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, prior to tonight, I would have gone with American Alpha, but you swayed me, JR. So I'm going to go with your scenario and go with Heath Slater and Rhino, and Beulah gets that good cheese whiz on Sunday night.
We've been waiting for your brother, Nate.
Name brand.
Yeah. There's a lot of depth, too, in SmackDown's tag team. So, I mean, if you give it to Heath and Rhino, they can fight everybody else while there's a hot Alpha Usos feud.
I know. I'm hoping the Headbangers stick around, too, by the way. That's
they look good.
Maybe they'll step in for that Dudley role, you know?
Yeah.
Did you see the timing on the mosh pit was perfect?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they look great, and you know, they've been talking about a comeback for a while. I don't see why you wouldn't just keep them around, even if they just put other teams over.
Shout out to Glenn Ruth, friend of the podcast.
Yes, PTB alum. Steve, who you like?
Well, first of all, I don't know if they're going to come back if kickball season's going on, you know?
That's right.
It's like the Sid of our times.
Yes, yes.
right.
I'll change it up a little bit. I do think Slater and Ren are going to win at this point, but I think they're going to go against the Usos in the final because the little scuttlebutt between them and Alpha was kind of was subtle, I'd say, at SummerSlam. So I think that the Usos beat Alpha by cheating to make it to the final, and then Slater and Rhino win straight up, maybe by some sort of Alpha, you know, comes out, Rhino gores. Slater gets some Ritz crackers instead of saltines for the cheese whiz.
All right, main event, Todd, real quick. Dean Ambrose, AJ Styles.
I say Ambrose by the skin of his teeth or hardcore because I want to see the rematch at No Mercy up here in NorCal in October.
Selfish. Nate?
AJ Styles, he's the best thing going in the entire company, and unfortunately I have not been lit on fire by Dean's title run so far.
Steve?
I've been going back and forth in this. Like lately, they've been doing these 2-3 match series throughout pay-per-views. I will stick with who I think should win, and that's AJ leading up to an AJ Randy Orton championship bout down the line.
AJ, 100% lock. They are not having him beat John Cena clean at SummerSlam like they did, yeah, and then have him lose to Dean Ambrose.
I know. I'm being selfish. Happening. You're right.
Strap the rocket to the face that runs the place. All right, we're going to take a break. Todd, thank you so much for joining us. It was a blast having you here for your debut appearance. We have another debut coming up in our next segment and one big return because we'll be talking to Lucha Underground Season 3. We'll be looking back at Ultima Lucha Dose and much, much more. So stick with us here on Hey, you could be next. You better give respect. This ain't nobody breaking this redneck. No, they don't want none. No, they don't want none. They don't want none. No, they don't want none. They don't want none. No, they don't want none. They look scared. No, they don't really want none. Place to be Nations, JT Rizzuto here. In addition to the archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. All of this in addition to Scott Keith's Podcast of Doom, which includes discussions on questions from listeners as well as current day and old school wrestling. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Please Be Nation, welcome back to our sixth episode of Clotheslines and Headlines. Steve Willie here, along with JT, Justin Rosero, and the Godfather, Nate Milton. And we have dumped Todd, left him on the West Coast, where he'll probably, within the next few years, be cracking off into the ocean where California belongs. Wait, that's kind of a hot take that we're getting away from here. We have two new special guests, though. First, someone from the other side of the country. And who knows? We can have like an East Coast, West Coast war at some point. Biggie and Tupac. Glenn Butler, who do you see? Who's your side? What side are you on there?
Oh, I'm East Coast all the way, baby. Leading edge.
Leading edge.
That's why I call him Big Papa.
And making his debut on the show from the Lucha Undead show. I'm just going to call you Timothy. I'm not really sure of your last name. I am really good at these introductions.
Well prepared.
Nate, that's you got to take me to school after we're done here. We got to go to podcasting school.
Yeah, Timothy Robert Buckner. That's my full given name if you're ever looking for me for any reason. I am on Lucha Undead, my own show where we interview people from PTBN and other places and talk about beer. And then I also do This Week in Wrestling over there with Pete and Johnny Sorrow. So I'm actually two podcasts on the network.
There you go.
And even bringing in some shots to the yes. The beer podcast, which I'm excited to listen to.
Yes, yes. And I guess I should represent for the best coast out here in the West. I'm in beautiful Los Angeles, California.
Mm. Beautiful in LA. I don't know if I've ever heard those two terms together. But I do love California. And I love Todd Weber. And I think I love you, Timothy. I just met you. You know, love at first sight. So we're having you both on tonight to discuss Lucha Underground and why, after we previewed Lucha Underground months and months and months ago, are we going to be going over it now? Well, next week, September 7th, a quick turnaround this time, going from season 2 to season 3. September 7th, so a week from the night that we are taping this, they'll see the season debut only a short couple months. July 20th was the season finale, so really only about a six-week layoff between Ultima Lucha Dos and the season premiere of number 3. And what we're going to do is just quick do a little bit of roundtable. We got Glenn, Timothy, Justin a little bit caught up with some of the Lucha Underground, so we might include him if we feel like we like him enough to do so. And instead of going through the entire card of something that took place 6 weeks ago at this point, some of the matches 8 weeks ago, thought what we might do is look at some of the matches or plenty of matches over the last three of those 3 weeks and say, hey, what was a match that you either really enjoyed, really stuck out to, or maybe just absolutely positively hated? And Glenn, because you are my partner in crime, I was going to start with you. If there was, you know, a match on the card that stuck out to you in some way?
Sure. Well, first, I tried to watch some of Ultima Lucha Dos again to prepare to come on here tonight, And I just want to say, rest in peace, Mr. Sisko. Gone but not forgotten.
Yes. Taken away from us too soon.
I actually luckily just saw him live about 4 or 5 days ago out here. So he's doing all right still. Yeah, exactly. sorry for breaking the fantasy here, guys.
Broke the timeline, man. Broke the timeline. No, that was just an awesome, awesome scene with Dario straight up murdering him. Dario is like the best character on the show, and that was definitely a highlight for him. But one match that I want to highlight a little bit is from the Four Unique Opportunity tournament, Son of Havoc versus Tejano, which I was not expecting much from because of the four guys in the Unique Opportunity tournament, I really, really like Cage, and I really like the Mac, mostly because of his Steve Austin cosplay. But the Son of Havoc Tejano match really, really impressed and surprised me. Like, from watching as much of Lucha Underground as I have, I wouldn't have expected such an entertaining brawl out of Tejano in particular. But they cut a really, really good pace. I loved all the crazy weapon spots, the back body drop through the bar at ringside, the bro kick into the box of smashed wine bottles toward the end of the match. They even outdid the Cage Mac match with the pinatas and the beer and everything. I think that really, really impressed. And I hope, you said we were doing this spoiler-free. I haven't seen any spoilers. I hope that they use the tease of the Son of Havoc main event for Ultima Lucha Tres to, if not actually put him in that main event, then to at least try to build him into a little more of a player in Season 3. Like, maybe get the Gift of the Gods on him at some point after he does a feud with Dr. Wagner. People who already know everything that happened are probably laughing at me, but that's something that, after all of this, that I'm looking forward to.
And we will be previewing Season 3, and it is important to note, and we'll put this in the write-up as well, that we are only going to go off of what we saw on television for Ultima Lucha Dos, and maybe prognosticate what might happen, and then the 3.5-minute trailer that was released by Lucha Underground in anticipation of the next season. The spoilers are out there. We've been trying on this show to stay away from that, because, you know, quite frankly, we want to watch it on TV and enjoy it and not have everything ruined. And I think, you know, going back to WWE talk that we did before, maybe one of the reasons why people are enjoying SmackDown right now is because they legitimately don't know what's going to happen. Now, Timothy, anything that stood out for you from Ultima Lucha Dos, whether it's a match or backstage segment?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think what stood out the most probably because it's kind of a signature Lucha Underground match would have to have been the Gift of the Gods elimination ladder match, just because it was early on in the show proper, because I kind of consider that Four Unique Opportunity as like the pre-show to Ultima Lucha. That's what it really felt like. It was not really part of the main card proper, and it was one of the early matches on, and it was before I kind of, because towards the end I did get a little burnt out on that every match was kind of gimmicky. Mm-hmm. And so this one being kind of a trademark Lucha Underground gimmick, and being so early on and I wasn't completely burnt out, it really stood out to me. I think they did such a great job of tying a lot of the loose ends together and then also leading into the next season at the same time, because it is for a belt that's essentially a title shot that you're going to have to defend. But then they're also, yeah, they're mixing in kind of everybody who had interactions with each other throughout the season prior, with Marty the Moth and kind of Killshot and Sexy Star with Mariposa and kind of, you know, Daga's issues with Cobra Moon coming in and trying to help him in the match, and just everything that kind of mixed together. And I felt like it was a really nice display of what Lucha Underground is all about, which is that storytelling in wrestling with a mixture of nice high spots. I think one of the biggest issues of the match really though was Nightclaw, who kind of just came in and they didn't really build him up that well for the crowd. I think a lot of people, I don't know if we want to get into it. I mean, I will get into it later when we start talking about some other backstage kind of stuff. But I think a lot of people in the audience had no clue who he was underneath the mask, or what they were supposed to think about the character in general. And he's actually a guy that was kind of a big deal that he was coming in. So it's just, it showed everything about Lucha Underground, I think, in one match, which is that it's really great storytelling, but also when they do kind of fall on their face, they make these kind of mistakes that just kind of go hand in hand with a company that's not really being run by people who are necessarily 100% familiar with the trappings of professional wrestling.
And then exactly. And if you're doing the backstage separately and you're not showing it to your crowd, your live crowd. It's not like Rey Mysterio is running out to, you know, be the surprise in this match, or an Alberto Del Patron. You know, this is a Nightclaw, a guy in a, you know, a Black Panther cosplay costume. You know, no one's really heard of him locally.
Yeah, and they didn't go out of their way to make it clear, you know, kind of who it is. Because the guy who it was has somewhat of a rep.
Mm-hmm. I did think that this match was interesting in comparison to some of the Gift of the Gods previously, because generally you would have your top people in those matches. The previous two had top guys in that. Where in this one, you know, you had some of your, you know, your mid-card in terms of Sinestro de la Muerte, someone who was just really an afterthought at this part. Daga, who, at least on Lucha Underground, is seen as more of an up-and-comer. So I did like that different kind of context to the match, where this is like more of a Money in the Bank type match, where you got mid-card guys fighting for, you know, the ultimate opportunity, as it were.
Yeah, that makes it much more of an opportunity to elevate someone, potentially.
Yeah, and the winner of that match, too, somewhat a surprise, but then if you think of the entire season-long story, really not that much of a surprise, and that was Sexy Star. And I think if, as we look ahead to season 3, how that's going to play out will be intriguing, because while Sexy Star, and one of the positives that you and I, Glenn, have talked about previously on this podcast, you know, as the women are seen at pretty much as equal as men, it is pretty clear that Sexy Star is a step below in the ladder from like a Pentagon or a Montanza Cueto or a Mil Muertes. Like, that is a clear step below, like those guys who are generally in the title hunt. So I'm not certain how that's going to play out, and I'm intrigued by it.
Yeah, but again, that's an opportunity to elevate her. So I look forward mm-hmm. to seeing what they do with that. I think Lucha Underground basically has it right in terms of integrating women and men in wrestling, in that it's easy to overthink it. And I was overthinking it for a very, very long time until I watched Lucha Underground, and they just kind of do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of making all of the matches about the fact that it's a woman fighting a man when it happens, they just do it, where they're wrestlers and they trade moves. Except for, to an extent, Sexy Star, whose storyline over the last season was about gendered violence in a very important way, and right. about her overcoming that in a very important way again, and finally overcoming it completely in terms of that storyline in the Gift of the Gods match.
And from what I understand, a metaphor of her real life, they kind of alluded to it in commentary a couple times during the season. And, you know, read a little bit something about that, too. So, you know, cathartic and on a fictional and, you know, non-fictional level, perhaps, for those who are, quote-unquote, in the know.
By the way, is there a creepier character in wrestling than Marty the Moth?
He's the man.
Yeah.
I mean, just makes your skin crawl every time you see him. Especially when he's creeping up on Melissa Santos before all of his matches. It's just, ugh.
And you don't know if Melissa is acting or is legitimately surprised and creeped out by it all.
Right.
It's the tights. It's those tight tights. That's what does it.
Yeah.
Almost flesh tone.
And, you know, wonder, you know, if the WWE even realized that, like, hey, that's someone who got away. Mm. You know, you talk about EC3 and, you know, maybe a Drew Galloway, but he's kind of an under-the-radar guy who they had. And is, you know, kind of making a little bit of a name for himself. He was down in Triple Mania for a
sometimes you have
AAA
to, though.
Promotion.
You know what I mean? I think it's guys like that, to me, and even Ethan Carter, I don't think they reach these heights within the constructs of WWE, even with the new NXT format. Sometimes you just need
sure.
to go and do your thing. And Glenn, I think you made an awesome point about the, you know, man versus woman, intergender kind of stuff that they have going on. And you're right. They just do it. It's not made. They don't announce it. It's not an intergender match. You know, it's not played up that way. It's just known. They fight each other and the women can hang, and that's what it is. Like, that's just how it is. And you're right, it's eye opening, because the first time I watched it, I was kinda like, oh, but I'm like, well, I guess this is just what it is. And they do a great job just making everyone equal and everything equal and not making it a big deal or calling special attention to it. It's done. I think it's a great point.
Yeah, I just think the only issue is that they do that in ring for sure, but they need to get Stryker on the same page. From time to time, I find that he calls it to it. He calls attention to it too often when he doesn't need to. But I mean, you know, we don't need to pick apart Stryker because there's thousands of podcasts.
That leather jacket. How can you wear that leather jacket while he announces it?
Yeah, there are a few times where Stryker is just kind of off the page of what they're doing. Like, I was rewatching the Trios title match earlier today, which was a really good match. But Stryker spent about half the match yelling about, like, rules lawyering in terms of tagging in and out, which I think he entirely made up because it wasn't part of the story that anybody was doing in the ring, even the referee. Like, it's just Stryker yelling about it.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what he did when he was in WWE, too. So, I mean, I guess it's to be expected, but it's this weird thing because I remember Booker T used to pull the same thing when he was calling SmackDown, and I used to, like, love it. Because I was just like, I love Booker T. I want to watch the show that Booker T's calling is what I used to always say. And it's like Stryker does it in a way that just comes off annoying. Meanwhile, while Booker T did it, it was like endearing. And I just think there's something about Stryker.
He's trying to be like a poor man's Gorilla Monsoon at times. You know what I mean? Just like Gorilla had the gravitas to pull off the bullshit that he spewed and made stuff up and out of nowhere that wasn't even going on. But it worked because he had the, you know, he could carry it. He had the grace of Gorilla Monsoon. He could do it. Matt Stryker doesn't have that same benefit of the doubt, and I think that's why he dropped off a cliff in WWE after a while. Like, he was really good for a little bit, and then he just went so over the top with it that he just kind of fell out of the grace of the fans.
Well, to reset, as you know, that season two has come to an end. We're at 3 points. Number one, our heavyweight champion at this point is It's still Montanza Cueto. Very surprising that he won, you know, after debuting the dark form of Pentagon Jr. He seemed like it would be crystal made for him to get the victory and not lose in just plain old match fashion. But Pentagon Dark then turned on his master Vampiro in another kind of, you know, second gory, bloody reference of the night here on our podcast. Just kind of taking the barbed wire to Vampiro, and Vampiro definitely knows how to bleed. Our, as we mentioned, the Gift of the Gods champion is Sexy Star, and our Trios champion, who, and I thought was a really great match. I know other people that I looked at online today did not like it as much as I did, but Aerostar, Drago, Phoenix, your masked high flyers of AAA defeating Worldwide Underground of who I think, and I mentioned on the podcast previously, the now underrated Jack Evans, just a smarmy, talks the entire match heel. PJ Black and Johnny Mundo, who the internet loves to hate. I thought that was an excellent match. But those are your Trios champions going forward. As Glenn alluded to, Mr. Cisco is dead, but is he? Because El Rey and Lucha Underground unleashed their season 3 preview, which was like a 3.5 minute video. And I've watched it twice, and lo and behold, Cisco's fighting in it. What's going on in that, Glenn?
I don't know. I mean, it could be anything. It could be his twin brother. It could be some sort of time travel shenanigans, although that's a little more Chikara than Lucha Underground. It could be them using an old clip in the trailer. I don't know.
Now, one guy I saw in the trailer who was definitely new was a man who left NXT on his own volition and has returned to the indies, and that is Sami Callihan. And Timothy, you said you saw some other people in there.
Yeah, I saw there's Paul London with his two kind of masked creepos, the guy in the checkerboard suit and another guy in just a dark mask. And so I guess Paul London is running some kind of, weirdo cult, I'm going to assume. It just kind of fits his character that it would be something along those lines. And there's also A.R. Fox, who I don't know if you guys notice him or are even familiar with him, but he wrestles. He's been in PWG. He's been in Evolve. He actually was the first Evolve champion, which I don't think a lot of people even realize. He also wrestles a lot in CZW now, and he shows up in the trailer there. I think that was really it. That was the big ones that I noticed. I did notice a new member of the Worldwide Underground, and I couldn't make out exactly who it was, but you see him coming in from kind of from the right-hand side of the screen, fourth member of the group, or I guess fifth member, including Taya. So yeah, it looks like there's a lot of stuff going to get shaken up in the next season, just from this trailer.
And we did leave with Dario Cueto going to jail at the end of last season, but as we learned really quickly at the end of the first season into the beginning of the second, Dario has his way of coming back and making his presence felt. Glenn, what's your excitement level about season three?
Given how much I really enjoyed season two, I am really excited for season three. I kind of missed having Lucha every week, and I'm glad that I'm just going to get it back in my routine. I'm glad that it's going to be a longer season than the last one was, too.
And Timothy, how about you?
A little less, if I'm perfectly honest, just because I've been reviewing the show on This Week in Wrestling, and when the last episode of Ultima Lucha this year finished, I was kind of like, perfect timing, because they had just made it to kind of my limit with Dario killing another guy and getting arrested, and I was kind of like, all right, I'm good, I'm gonna enjoy this little breather. And then they announced that the next season is coming so quickly after that, and I was just kind of like, oh, I was looking a little bit forward to having maybe a month or two off from the show. The stuff that I've heard is coming down the pike. It sounds intriguing, and I'm like definitely into seeing it, especially with guys like Callahan and AR Fox, who I'm big fans of. So I'm gonna watch it. I'm gonna enjoy it. But I would have liked maybe a little bit longer break or something along those lines, because I know this season's gonna be very long. It's almost getting to the point where I hate to say it, but they're kind of like going a little bit too far and deviating from what made Lucha Underground special, is feeling like it was a TV show with a regular TV season.
Right. I was going to suggest too, and if you go back and listen to the beginning of our show, we were talking about our almost like our own state of the union and how we're feeling about wrestling in general right now, post SummerSlam. I could have used like a good 3-month break from Lucha Underground, not because I hate Lucha Underground or I think it's going way downhill or anything like that. I think it took a little bit of a step back from season one and early season two, but I still think it's very good, and it's a really nice alternative to everything else that's out there. But it's kind of nice to have one less show to watch during the week.
And there's going to be a couple weeks of overlap with the CWC, so that's going to be even harder. If you talk about having shows to watch, you've got an extra show and then Lucha Underground coming back, so it's even more on top of that.
Well, it goes with my plan to just quit work and just watch wrestling and send my kids to school full time. That's going to be it. And I know that our guest that's coming up after the break will probably pay for that, I'm assuming.
I thought we were going to start fleecing the listeners.
Oh, that could be a good idea.
Patreon time.
Yeah, we're gonna need a couple grand per week on the Patreon, and that's a straight shoot, brothers. We're going to need that, or else not going to be able to afford our lifestyles.
Yeah, well, I'm already taking donations for my podcasting university. It's going to be huge. You can sign up with
Ali.
I'll throw in some steaks if you want to join my podcasting university. We'll work it out, fellas, off air.
Will I be able to take a picture with a life-size cutout of you?
You will. You've had your choice. Depending on how much you pledge, you can take a picture with me. You can take a picture with Sting, because we're close personal friends. There's lots of things that we can do for the listeners.
Do you teach gestricity?
Hey, I was going to say something, but I won't say it. Because
that make the world go round.
I was gonna say that's not how the world goes around, brother.
Can I get a doctorate in style?
Yes.
We do have a undergraduate program in Jive Soul Bro.
There you go. All right.
Well, Timothy, Glenn, thank you very much for being on.
Timothy's sticking around, by the way.
Yeah, I know. But I was just gonna say thank you for.
I'm just glad we found out his last name. I thought it was McVeigh this whole time. I was kind of afraid.
Oh, that's brutal.
I was hoping it was Kirkton. Like, I've been waiting to talk to Tim Kirkton my whole life.
No, he'd be a little more.
Let me tell you about Lucha Underground. Dario Cueto.
Oh, man.
Cisco comes back to sing the thong song.
I wish I loved anything in life as much as Dario loves announcing stipulations.
Or as much as, and I always blank on her name, the ring announcer likes saying Daga. Daga!
Well, Glenn, it's been a pleasure. Hopefully we'll see you again soon. I got a nice back adjustment from Glenn when I saw him last week at SummerSlam.
I thought he was going to belly-to-belly you through the air hockey table. That's what I was going to say.
Always Timothy, an option.
Timothy, we will see you soon. In fact, so soon, we're going to see you in the next segment because you're going to be sticking around to talk some Ring of Honor and some PWG. And if only Justin would have let me say that to begin with, it would have gone so much smoother.
Yeah, we wouldn't have the belly-to-belly thing now. We're okay.
Yeah, we're good. We're good. We're trying to be professionals here. We'll be right back with more talk on independent wrestling on Clotheslines and Headlines. Ray Mysterio, when I'm jumping off the tightrope, banana clip with the scope, wearing all white like I'm the motherfucking boat. I'm on the air, any high, glide through the sky. This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
We are back on episode 6 of Place to Be Nation's Clotheslines and Headlines. It's the Godfather, it's JR, Steve Willie, and I think we're going to have to bring somebody else in on this. Of course, Timothy Buckner is still sticking around with us from the last segment. But I think in order to talk about this next topic, or this next group of topics, we got to bring in somebody with a little bit different perspective. And to accomplish that goal, I want to bring in our esteemed colleague, part of the Place to Be Nation family, the one and only Brad Woodling. What's going on, my brother?
Nate, good evening. Hey, guys.
Hi, Brad.
Hello. I'm ready.
Just playing with you there.
No one's excited to have you on at this point. You're just kind of there.
Oh, yeah. But you know what I am excited about, though, is to get into this next topic of discussion. And I think the great American songwriter, I'd call him a poet, Webby put it best in his song featuring Fabulous and Lil Bootsy. I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-N-T. Do you know what that means, man? And we're talking independent wrestling. And before we look forward, let's take a step back, fellas. Of course, we talked at the top of the program about the WWE's offering over the past weekend. But we'd be remiss if we didn't get into a little Ring of Honor who held their Death Before Dishonor card out in Vegas. And there were some surprises, maybe not some surprises, but definitely some shakeups on that card. So I guess we'll start with you, Brother Brad. What was kind of your big takeaway from this show? And were there any surprises that you weren't expecting heading into this card?
Well, I think that ROH really showed the momentum that they had. Finally getting out of Japan, getting past Global Wars and the War of the Worlds tour, had great TV out of Best in the World. They strung together 6 really solid TV episodes to build to this pay-per-view, and it really came across in the show. And I thought it was their strongest show of the year. I think it's right there with Supercard of Honor Night 1. I actually would put it slightly above it. And we talked when we previewed Best in the World, we talked about kind of how they had the rush 4 weeks of TV to kind of jam together a main event. But here, Adam Cole and Jay Lethal was something that had been building since Global Wars back in May. or late April, one of those two dates. But so again, we had very similar to last year when Jay Lethal dethroned Jay Briscoe. They had that kind of thing that spanned months to build to this big title match. And that same type of energy and atmosphere was here for Death Before Dishonor, led to a great main event, and one that I know that our friend Timothy was there in person for. So I'm certainly interested in his perspective and how Lethal and Cole and how the crowd was certainly split, but I thought that Jay had plenty of support despite Cole kind of being a popular heel type guy.
Yeah, no, the crowd was definitely passionate and hot for the whole show. I would say, and it kind of sucks to even say this, but the only down part of the night to me that I noticed from the crowd was during Adam Page's heat segment. It really felt like that was the only time that the crowd just didn't care. They didn't want to see Adam Page beating up Jay Briscoe. But other than that, I mean, the crowd was up for everything. There was definitely dueling chants back and forth. There was a lot of people who were clearly there for New Japan and Bullet Club, you know, respectively, both kind of groups. I heard people outside of the show in the lobby, and they're talking about Jay Lethal as the greatest wrestler in the world. And it's like it's not just a gimmick to them. They meant it. And these are the dyed-in-the-wool ROH fans that you kind of, for me, I think being in Southern California, I kind of forget exist, or maybe I have forgot exist, that there's still people that are this hardcore about ROH, because hearing them say, like, our champion's just the best wrestler in the world, that's how it works because he's our champion. And they really meant it. And I was just like, that was really cool. And you could hear it in the crowd chanting for him and essentially getting behind Jay Lethal so much. It was infectious. I was behind him too. I was like, fuck yeah, Jay Lethal's the man.
I love that match. And you know, you talk about Lethal, you know, when we had Kevin Kelly on the show, he talked about how you could make the argument that Jay Lethal is one of, if not the best ROH champions of all time. And just the way that the story was told in this match, where it was more about Lethal, you know, going for revenge, and Lethal, you know, being frustrated, and Lethal, you know, not falling into his usual game plan, and that was the lead to his downfall. I just dug it. I was a little bit skeptical about how he was going to work in his babyface role, but I think that they turned things around, man, and I'm excited. We were talking at the top of the show. Ring of Honor is something that sort of gets lost in the shuffle with me during my weekly intake of wrestling. But after Death Before Dishonor, I was certainly more invested and more energized about this Ring of Honor product.
And they really did Lethal especially, really did a great job, like you said, playing that off his game plan being a babyface thing. Because the triple tope spot that I've heard 1,000 old school wrestling fans complain about, that's such a babyface spot. Right, why does Jay Lethal do that? And he took it to the next level, because now he is a babyface and he does, you know, fucking, I think it was 7 or 8 topes by the end of it. And it's like, he had to turn it up, and he knew that he did to really play that up. Like, you're saying this is a terrible heel spot, or let me show you it as a babyface spot. And I just thought that is one of those little details that just shows how deep Jay Lethal's game is at this point. And you're right that there is an argument for, is Jay Lethal one of the greatest champions of all? And that sounds crazy, being someone who, you know, prayed at the altar of CM Punk and Samoa Joe and Bryan Danielson about just how amazing they were, and they made that belt feel so special. I mean, I've always kind of even argued Nigel McGuinness was one of the best champions, and now I think Lethal's in that conversation.
You know, and to your point with that, there's a subtle spot at the very end that leads to the finish. And I had made a comment before, and I'll privately to Steve, around where an ROH trope I see a lot more now is kind of how, like, they kind of like shrug off the match and then like hit like 3 big moves in a row to just end it. It's kind of what they do. That's kind of how their matches build when they've done like the finisher kickouts. They don't go back to the well and like, you know, do another lethal injection at pin, or like, so in this case, Adam Cole. But, and I have to correct myself, because in rewatching tonight, I watched it without commentary. I thought the commentary was great. I think that Nigel McGuinness has been amazing the last 2 months. An under the radar, quiet MVP of their programming coming out of Best in the World. And Kevin was great in their call here. But to your point, Timothy, with him overextending, so Lethal, actually, he gets really pissed that he grabs his tights on the roll up. And that's what leads to him hitting, you know, I, the name escapes me now, but you know, his knee to the back of the head of the, you know, Adam Cole's finish. And then Adam Cole, he instinctively knows like that's not going to get the job done. So he quickly hits a Shining Wizard and then another finisher. So at first, like, I didn't really like that kind of missed for me when I watched it. And then when I rewatched it, I was like, that made a lot of sense. That was really good. And to your point, I thought it was a great Cole performance. His facials and stuff were amazing. Really good heel stuff. And Lethal, glum Jay Lethal without his hair, you know, he kind of acts a little bit more sad. He really brought it in this one. I've heard, you know, our colleague Chris Zellner and others say before that Lethal always had the heel character, but he always wrestled as a face. To your point with the Tobys and stuff, it's true, because as if he thought he was the best in the world and the best athlete in the ring, so you're going to wrestle like a baby face in times like that. So it was kind of conflicting, but I thought he did really well. I thought it was the match of the night, and there was, you know, I think the Briscoe Page match was pretty close to it. I definitely like the main event more. But yeah, it was a really solid card.
Yeah, I think that's me. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you're fine. Go ahead. I'll save it for a second.
All right. I like the politeness right there, the etiquette. It's almost like a throwback to one of those pure wrestling matches. We shook hands. But to me, I would say outside of the main event, maybe my favorite match, and it's just because I'm such a big fan for these guys, and it have been for a while, was the tag title match.
Yes,
and just what, you know, Daniels and Cass still, man, and I don't want this to sound like an insult, but it probably is going to come out that way. But just at their age and at this stage of the game, in terms of their experience in the business, to be able to keep coming out with different things and to find ways to be entertaining and innovative, man, I'm just been really impressed with their run this go round in Ring of Honor.
You know, I think Daniels had a great year, and I agree with you 100%. Nate, I went into this one thinking, like, look, so you look at it on paper, and it seems like it's such a throwaway because all the juniors are in Japan, so they mix these teams that are teams in Japan in here. But each one of those teams all wrestled that match like they really wanted to win that belt, and that really helped it. And you could tell that Daniels laid it out, and it was really, really good. Borderline maybe my second favorite. I think I had it like 3 3/4. And that really blew me away. Did not think it would be that good. And they there are not really any misses in there. It is a really, really solid match.
Well, yeah, it's actually, I think it's perfect that I deferred to Nate there, because my point was going to be trying to jump into my kind of maybe my match of the night. And the tag match is high on the list for me, so I wanted to touch on it as well. I was going to just do it just to do it, even though I don't really necessarily have that as probably my favorite match of the night. But you're so right. I mean, Elgin is just so picture perfect working with Tanahashi. I've always said Tanahashi he's amazing working on the apron. So him just being the tag guy for Elgin, like taking the heat and then giving Elgin the hot tag so he can hit those big, huge spots that the crowd was in love with. Naito was the most over guy in the building. There's no question in my mind that on that night and the next night for the TV tapings, the guy that the crowd wanted to see the most was Naito. Meanwhile, I was in the minority because the guy I wanted to see the most was Evil, because he was like my number three performer of the G1. So I was like super hyped on seeing Evil live, and he brought it. I mean, the guy is just so good, and seeing him up close, it's really interesting because he wrestles so much bigger. I saw him in his street clothes outside, and he was probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 inches shorter than me, and probably weighs about like 100 pounds less than me. And the dude wrestles like a fucking bruiser. I mean, I'm probably cussing too much for this show. Sorry, guys. But he wrestles like a big, mean monster, you know, and he comes across like a damager. And so for me, I'm really impressed with the guy. So that tag match had no flaws. The finish was perfect. But I will get into what I think was my match of the night. And it's because it was kind of so out of left field, but it plays to the part of his personality that I think a lot of people don't realize, because he's constantly now the ace and the golden boy of New Japan, and that's Okada and Dalton Castle. And I think that when Okada gets to show off his personality and his kind of playful side while also working on the mat, getting to high fly, getting to base a little bit with a guy like Dalton Castle, who is deceptively strong and deceptively thick. So Okada loves high flying. I mean, he was trained in Torimon, the same Dragon Gate dojo that, you know, all these other guys that kind of do that junior heavyweight style. So when he gets to get in there and kind of mix it up and work a little bit of strange kind of lucha and mat-based stuff, and then he's also got the boys doing the fans, and he's just, you could tell he was having a good time, and I just had an amazing time. I thought that match was just like the most entertaining match on the card for me. The other matches may have been worked better as you know,
just straight up competitions. But that match was just so entertaining, and being there live, I was in love with the whole presentation.
Yeah, and I don't think that Okada mailed that in at all. Even if it was a little shticky, just with your normal comedy spots, I mean, really killing each other, and he killed him with the Rainmaker. I mean, like, I almost felt like afterwards when he kept like trying to shake his hand, it was like, I hope you're okay. I mean, that lariat was just, oh man, he killed Dalton. But I think that's a great point. I'm really glad you brought it up. You know, one of the points I brought up on this show and in my writing has been before is that, you know, you can ask five different people what their favorite part of the show was, and they may say five different things. And this is a great example because every match had something like that. And I thought that it was an incredibly strong Okada performance one-on-one for an ROH show.
And I was looking at that match too. My initial thoughts of it were that I wrote down, I was like, well, first of all, the crowd was 50-50, which I was kind of surprised at because especially with like Okada and Tanahashi – throughout the first couple years of New Japan being in Ring of Honor, those were like big guys that got pops. You know, Nakamura obviously too, but you know, he's no longer there. Those were like the two guys that they would focus on. And to see the 50-50 crowd for it, I was like, oh, this is going to be kind of interesting. The opening minutes, I wrote down that it seemed like Okada seemed like a step off. Like, he just wasn't getting his footing right. It just didn't seem himself. And I'm like, well, you know, he just had 19 nights of the G1. He might be a little tired. And then I even wrote down, like, man, I thought there was going to be more theatrics in this match. And as soon as I finished writing that down in my notebook, like, all those theatrics came and everything just started flowing together nicely. And there are, you know, great spots with the boys where Okada kind of got the boys on his side for a minute and Dalton in control. And I said this before, one of my favorite things are, you know, guys just tossing people with suplexes, and he does them so well. Because like you said, Timothy, he's like he's deceptively strong, and he doesn't look like he would be a guy who can, you know, throw somebody around. And, you know, Okada's probably definitely taller than him and maybe a little bit heavier than him. And he's just deadlifting him suplexes left and right. And then the finish was really clever, where I thought Okada was going to, like, at first drop him when he went to the Tombstone Piledriver, but then caught him, nailed him with that, and hit him with the Rainmaker. So what went started as a match is like, oh, man, I don't know. This isn't starting well, and really picked it up. You know, I really – the only match that on the card for me that didn't really work was the Bullet Club and Chaos. And I'm usually – like, I'm a pretty big Rocky Romero fan, but they're just – you know. Yano is just – he struggles out there at times. Like it's his gimmick to be the guy who kind of struggles a little bit. But, you know, he's trying to do the shtick with a turnbuckle pad and he can't even figure out how to get it off. And it just didn't flow that well. But the way it did flow to Paige Briscoe after the match was over kind of reminded me of an ECW show, the way they would run matches together. That was – Just a brutal match, the Paige Briscoe.
You know, and to Timothy's point, he had quickly said, and I'll let you jump in there, Tim, is, you know, the crowd was hot for that trios match, though.
Yeah.
Really, it wasn't until they were into it, you know, Yano and all that stuff, too. So it was interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, the crowd just loved Yano. So it was kind of the turnbuckle thing. I don't know if maybe it kind of died a death on tape because I didn't watch it. I haven't even watched it again on tape. But live, he goes for it, and it worked, especially because where I was at, I could see his face as he's working on it. But he runs over, and he just shouts in, like, you know, the broken English. He's like, I take off turnbuckle. And the whole crowd just fucking pops. They're like, oh, yeah, he's going to do his thing. And then he goes over there, and it's you know, it's the zip ties instead of the regular ties. So he can't just rip them off. So they put some, like, other things. They weren't the zip ties. They were like just cheap little like pieces of plastic or something. So those popped right off, and he was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna get it. And then he keeps, so it almost felt like it was a planned spot because okay. it starts to come apart, and then he can't, and he's like, I can't figure this out. And he's looking at the crowd, and the crowd's like, ah. And then Rocky shows up with the snips, and he's like, oh, I've got these for you. And then, you know, he gets it. But I can't argue with you that Rocky's a guy who, in a personal conversation I had with him, I said, I think you're secretly like one of the top 20 best workers on the planet, but no one knows it because you hide in these tag matches and just kind of do your comedy spots. And he wasn't there on this show at all. And I've seen Rocky bring it and just have like match of the night level stuff, mm-hmm. even at PWG, where everyone's like at their top level bringing it. And Rocky just is so good. But on this show, Rocky... I hate to say it, but it almost felt like maybe he was just, you know, getting a paycheck because he's stuck in a random trios match and he's not really there to do anything but kind of play off Yano's shtick and comedy. So, I think Trent was having a lot of fun all weekend, honestly. But like, yeah, it's just Yano and Trent don't make a great match for me personally. I think other people were hugely into Yano though.
Well, and any other things that stuck out for people? Fish Briscoe was a match that was, man, you know, I don't know. It was decent. It was, if Chad was here, he'd probably say it would be like a 3.25, 3.5 star match, you know, slightly above, you know, like a good match. I did like that it turned out to be Bobby Fish's kicks versus Mark Briscoe's kind of more hardcore Cactus Jack style that he's been leaning to in single matches. What's weird to me about Bobby Fish is that he is two different characters on the same show. If he's with Red Dragon, he mutes some of the talking a little bit. And, you know, he's a good guy. But when he's on his own as a single, he is purposely over the top annoying. Just seems different. And maybe, I don't know if I'm the only one who sees that, or Brad, have you noticed that at all? Or am I just,
I think he definitely dials it up when he's, when that's what it calls for. And he's playing the heelish role. I think even back to last year when he had the one-on-one title shot with Jay Briscoe, he was running his mouth all the time. I think it's just kind of his MO when he's doing the solos thing to maybe, I don't want to say make up like he's not a good wrestler. He's a great wrestler, but
oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, they kind of add to that. And I thought that, I thought that match started a little bit slow and it seemed a little bit off, but they really were laying into each other. Mm-hmm. And, I thought that built really well. I thought that Mark Briscoe could make an argument for the best worker of the night. I want to be like, well, he was just selling really well. He was, but I mean, he was really working it in to his different moves and his comebacks and stuff and how it would still hurt him. And it was like, wow, this is really, and that match got quite an amount of time. I thought they built that really, really well. There's really good near falls where, I was buying in the mark there. So yeah, I think it was right around 3.5. Actually, most of the show outside the trios was right in that range. You can make an argument. Really for any of them. I mean, maybe Shibata and Silas was like closer to 3 for me personally, but I know Chad liked that more than I did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of why I think it was the best card they put on all year. Cause there's no downtime in it.
Yeah, definitely. In my opinion, you know, top to bottom, this was probably their most cohesive effort. And then, you know, again, the high points for me being the tag title match. And then of course the main event, like I was very impressed. And again, I'm somebody who kind of goes in and out with Ring of Honor. You know, we like Sam and Diane on Cheers, because that's a current reference that the kids will get. But that's my Ring of Honor viewing. But I was locked in on this show, and it definitely gives me more enthusiasm looking at Ring of Honor going forward.
Yeah, I agree with you guys saying this is card of the year for them, show of the year or whatever. And I think a big part of it too is that everyone complains about ROH sacrificing their guys to New Japan, and it didn't feel like that at all on this show. I think the big kind of New Japan wins were, you know, Shibata over Silas, which to me didn't feel bad because I'm a huge Shibata fan, and I don't think that there's anybody in the building or anyone watching the show that would complain about Shibata beating Silas. And then you could say Dalton Castle and Okada, but I think that match ended up delivering in a way where by the end of it, it didn't feel like, oh, you know, now Dalton Castle is kind of being sacrificed to put over a New Japan guy. And then meanwhile, the rest of the card really focused on New Japan guys. And playing into that even bigger is the TV taping the next night, I felt really did come across like ROH is getting out of the funk of the biggest argument that I've heard, the biggest complaint about ROH for the past year has been the focus on New Japan guys and not making any of their own wrestlers look like or feel like stars. And coming out of the TV taping, I really felt like they're going in a good direction. I'm excited to watch what I saw live put onto the actual television program, because it really did feel like they're building multiple different guys in ways that they're going after titles or they're having feuds that feel important. And it was all ROH guys in the center stage as the important focal parts of the matches and of the angles going in the future. So I'm really excited for Final Battle coming out of this, knowing that that's like probably the next big show and the closer of the year.
No, and I think it's a great point, Steve, just real quick. I think that the New Japan ROH thing, I think that probably peaked in February at the 13th anniversary show, where people were just like, because it was playing off of last year. But I mean, anybody that watched Global Wars or that whole tour, like, it had shifted already. But again, it takes time to get the momentum. And so I'm glad that you brought that up, Timothy, because I felt the same way that come out of this show is that I'm, you know, that's kind of like an ice cold take now, you know, like New Japan's using Ring of Honor so they can infiltrate America and run their own shows here. You know, that bullshit. But so Steve, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, like, it's happening in Japan, too. Like, who's the IWGP title holders? It's the Briscoes. Who's the number one contender for the championships right now? The Young Bucks. You know, you got two contracted ROH teams fighting for the IWGP belts in Japan. And Shibata, you know, it was his first time over. You fed him a guy who's in the mid card, who, you know, was a guy who wasn't really getting on the show that much. Even made a really nice promo before the match about that itself. You're obviously there to feed him to Shibata on his debut so that he can go on and face Kyle O'Reilly at Field of Honor. And are we okay talking about Field of Honor results here? I know it's not the
I think we could say that if to play into what Timothy and says, and we could echo that, you know, the results are kind of playing into kind of that theme with ROH being able to get the upper hand. It's up to you, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, the results are out there. It happened, you know, quite a few days ago that O'Reilly, who, you know, at the end of Death by Dishonor, had continued his feud with Cole. O'Reilly defeated Shibata in a very close match. But, you know, Shibata, one of the top guys in New Japan, and someone who has seen even more so as a top guy, I would argue, in the United States, you know, someone who people mark out about quite a bit. And, you know, O'Reilly goes over. So,
yeah,
it's just like you said, it is an ice cold take. And I think there's been a definitive shift in Ring of Honor since Global Wars, I would say. Global Wars was kind of your last New Japan versus Ring of Honor all-star shows where you just line people up as an exhibition, put all your storylines on hold. The first shift was get out of that and then really super focus on the heavyweight title belt with Bullet Club and Adam Cole versus Lethal, you know, Colt Cabana kind of being a second in that. And now what I'm hoping we will see, based on what you're saying, Timothy, from the TV tapings, is that we're going to start seeing some of the rest of the cards feud shape out. Because outside of Briscoe Page, which was really just a callback to an earlier feud from them, you know, this was kind of just setting up some other things that was going on. You know, the big two feuds on that show were the main event and, you know, Fish Briscoe, I'd say, over from the last 6 weeks. So one other news bit, too, that we wanted to talk about. They did announce, Kevin Kelly had kind of alluded to it, that there were some new titles coming, and they have formally announced a six-man title. And they've already talked about some names that will be involved. It's going to start at the next pay-per-view, which is in September. September 30th, I believe, from Lowell, Massachusetts. And, Justin, are you going to go see that?
No, I think I've hit my quota for live wrestling this year.
Bring the family.
The next one will bring a divorce upon us. So I think we're good. I'm waiting for Mania. I'm out till Mania.
They did announce The Addiction, who teamed with Kamitachi, Bullet Club, an unknown Bullet Club team, The Cabinet. Ugh, The Cabinet. And my guess, you know, they haven't said anything, but Taven's been talking about the New Kingdom since January.
I think that's
what this is going to be. You know, it's going to be their tournament, whomever Taven starts to team with. Nate, I don't even know if you've heard about this yet, but like, thoughts on bringing new titles in and then, you know, what some might call a throwback title in a way, the six-man title is not something you see very often.
Now, this is the first time I'm hearing about the six-man title, which immediately when you brought that up, Brother Steve, it brought to mind the good old days with Junkyard Dog and Tommy Rich and Dustin Rhodes for some damn reason.
literally has been since then that there have been six-man titles in North America. So you're not wrong.
No, I hadn't heard about this. I think it's intriguing. I did see online, mainly because I have a friend that does some work over at Ring Bells, about the Women of Honor and their situation, and they are wanting to establish a title, which I think is interesting, because obviously one of the complaints that I would have for Ring of Honor over the past few years is their start-stop, hot-cold kind of dealings when it comes to the women wrestlers.
Absolutely.
And now it seems like they've got at least a foundation, a core for a division, and so I'm interested to see where that goes.
Yeah, yeah, and just leave the matches on YouTube, you know, tape them before the shows. Is that where they're going with it? You know, they like you said, they have their core. They've been bringing people in and out as well as special guests. I think they had like Deonna Purrazzo in for one. Mm. They had Candice LeRae in. They have their core as well. So, and that was originally when they said we're bringing new titles. That was the initial thought I had. I was like, oh, they're going to do a Women of Honor title.
Right, and I don't think that's completely out the window yet. And I think this is kind of strategic, and maybe I don't know. I'll have to talk to Kevin, but you know, when they announced the six-man titles, there was it was a tepid hashtag, but the Women of Honor account was retweeting them, which is why I think that they were in on it, is that they were trying to build like, hey, why don't we have one of these? And I think that's smart, right? Mm-hmm. Like, people were, I want to say upset. I think they were nonplussed about the six-man because they haven't done anything to build to it yet because the tournament's going to start. It's kind of one of those wait-and-see things. I think it's an interesting idea with the relationship with CMLL, and I don't want to make – like I read the press release that Joe Koff and the crew came up with, so I'm not –
proofread the press release.
That's right.
Joe Koff.
And so I am Joey Koff Jr., so I get when there's new relationships that they have, and I think, we're going to hear more about their UK stuff when they have the tour over there, and I could see why they would want to do this, but I think that it was just I think there's going to be some – I have some questions around how they're going to balance the TV time with that and putting it over. And I don't think the roster's too thin, especially with these people in and out. I think it gives – Steve, you just brought up a point about really there were only two storylines going into the pay-per-view, and that's kind of the status quo for ROH. So here's another one to like keep people involved and be like, well, they're going back for these belts or whatever. It's a really basic storyline, but – I think that Ring of Honor does those pretty good when it comes to, competition and rematches and stuff for belts. So, but for the women's thing, I do think they're going to get to that. They did do the VOD from before the Baltimore taping. They did do the episode of TV, episode 249 was the Women of Honor one that was, it was 5 months old, but regardless, the point was that this was a nationally broadcast syndicated, show that was all women's wrestling. So I do think they're still in on it. And I think that you'll see maybe another episode, depending on gaps between pay-per-views. That was a problem earlier this year where they had all those gaps with the Honor Rising shows and then Best Ofs and stuff. And but they kind of snuck the Women of Honor one into the good time before. So I think we'll eventually see both. But I think that there definitely was some movement for the women's one.
Yeah, I was just going to say my biggest point and why I like the trios belts is just I hate the concept of having wrestling shows where you regularly have these matches that don't have a defined division. And so it feels like when you're having so many trios matches now with Kamitachi and the Addiction, with the Bullet Club, with Chaos and with the the embassy. No, it's not the embassy. What are they called? The cabinet. It really does feel like, well, what's the point of all these trios matches? You don't have titles. You don't have a division. You don't. It's just these are all just basically fodder stopgap matches to kind of fill out feuds. So bringing in the titles can now make those matches feel important in some ways. But when it comes to the Women of Honor, there was a Women of Honor match on the TV tape, and there was actually two. But the one that stood out to me was Crazy Mary Dobson and Veda Scott. And these two girls, at the start of it, the crowd was kind of disrespecting them. They're not big fans of them, talking shit. And by the end of it, I think they won everybody over with just how good they were in the ring. And this is just, you know, two random girls. Veda Scott, I know, is pretty integral of ROH at this point, but she's not thought of as a wrestler. And this is just, you know, these two girls. And I think that ROH does have a lot more girls that they can bring in and use more regularly. And they probably do need to focus on that side of the division a little bit more.
I agree. And real quick, before we make a pivot to our next topic, I do want to make a clarification because I know we got fact checkers out there. It was Junkyard Dog, Tommy Rich, and Ricky Morton, not Dustin Rhodes.
There you go.
That's a very important point of clarification. But now let's go from Ring of Honor to a big upcoming tournament, and that is, of course, the Battle of Los Angeles. No, not that great album from 1999. Shout out to Rage Against the Machine. But we're talking about PWG's annual offering. And Brother Steve, did you want to do the honors in terms of revealing, or I mean, we're not revealing, the names are out there, but letting the listeners know who's going to be participating this year?
Sure. The first round matches are already out there. The first one is Phoenix, you know, seen in Lucha Underground and AAA, against Will Ospreay, who's getting some play in New Japan, will also be in Ring of Honor coming up soon. Also we'll have, which this could be a really interesting match, Kyle O'Reilly versus Matthew Riddle. Riddle getting a lot of work, down south, in Evolve. My pick for match of the first round, what I am looking forward to the most, Dalton Castle against Jack Gallagher, recently seen in the CWC, getting over quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
We have kind of an odd matchup considering where these two are at points of their career. Chris Hero against Jushin Thunder Liger. I have the two names I'm not really familiar with as much, so I'm hoping that Timothy can throw me a bone here when we talk about this. Mark Andrews against Pete Dunne. We have John Hedigan, also known as Johnny Mundo, against Matt Sydal. Kamitachi versus Chad Campbell's pick for Wrestler of the Year so far, I believe, is Trevor Lee. Jeff Cobb versus Ricochet. Cedric Alexander also making some big waves and looks to possibly be debuting on Raw soon against Mark Haskins. The villain, Marty Scurll, I'm probably not the first person to screw that up, against Pentagon Jr. Match where I'm not really sure about what's going to happen here. Cody Rhodes against Sammy Callahan. That could be ugly. And then the final first round match, got some European specialist here. Tommy End against Zack Sabre Jr. Tim, you lucky bastard. You are going to be at this event. Are you going all 3 days?
All three nights, yep. My beautiful wife is coming with me on the second night. My beautiful friends and family at Reseda will be there all three nights with me. I'm super stoked. I'm going and, like, I'm counting the hours at this point.
Yeah, it sounds absolutely amazing. I don't even know where to start with. You know, I did not know when we got you on that you were going to be going, and it got me just really excited for you. But what are you most looking forward to?
Oh, God. I mean, Matt Riddle, obviously. I can't wait to see Matt Riddle and Kyle O'Reilly. I wouldn't be surprised to see Matt Riddle win that, but, you know, Kyle is such a big deal there. Just had this amazing match for the title. And then Tommy End, Zack Sabre Jr. I think that's another one where I could, even though it seems crazy, I think they could have Tommy End beat the champion in the first round and just take him out in general. Hero Liger, how are you not fucking, like, how is not everyone just amped on seeing this match? Chris Hero wrote a piece for Sports Illustrated that it's on the website, the SI.com, that I just read today, and it just makes me feel like they're completely setting up Hero to win the way that he's talking about this. He gets to take on Liger, his years and years of experience in tournaments. Jeff Cobb, I'm always a fan of. But the match for me that's the biggest and the one that stands out the most, I mean, I love Pete Dunne. I want to see Pete Dunne and Andrew or Mark Andrews so much. Trevor Lee and Kamitachi, he's not just Chad's pick for Wrestler of the Year. He's had my match of the year. I think that him and Andrew Everett from CWF Mid-Atlantic is the only match I've given 5 stars all year. I think it's definitely the match of the year. So it's like Trevor Lee is amazing and Kamitachi's so good too. But the match that I think most people are overlooking, or you know, some people aren't, but it's two guys who I think are at their peaks right now, and they're going off against each other, and that's Mark Haskins and Cedric Alexander. I mean, both these guys are putting out the best matches of their entire careers that have been long, amazing careers for both guys. Mark Haskins, it feels like a lifetime since he got his little shot in TNA years and years ago. And Cedric Alexander, I mean, geez, he had, what, half a career in ROH? And when he was there, he's getting wasted. And now he comes back in the CWC and they put out this, you know, this random tweet where Adam Cole's like, I don't feel like being in the tournament anymore. We got Cedric Alexander, who happens to be working King of Trios the night before, you know, so he's flying in just for the show on the Saturday night. And these two guys are just phenomenal and they're going to fit together so well. I think Mark Haskins is a guy who can switch back and forth between heel and babyface. And Cedric is just the most immaculate babyface going right now. So much so that I see him getting every crowd that they're in front of to boo strong against Zack Sabre Jr., who's a guy who has been a preeminent babyface everywhere. And that's just Cedric's dynamic selling and his babyface fire and just everyone getting so behind this guy. So for me, that's my most excited match, what I want to see the most. And it might sound crazy on a card where you have Liger and Johnny Morrison and, you know, Sami Callihan and Cody Rhodes. But for me, it's these two guys who, you know, one's coming all the way from across the pond over in the UK, who's kind of considered a middleweight, junior weight, undercard, you know, been kind of the bread and butter mechanic guy for years and years, but just churns out these technically sound, amazing matches. And the other guy is a guy who was, you know, toiling away in the mid-card of ROH, what you can, some people say, is the second biggest company in America. Either way, he was in the middle to bottom of the card. Well, I'm like, these two guys are both still super hungry, still have a lot to prove, and are churning out the best matches of their career. And when they meet up, it's just, I think it's going to be something transcendent, and I'm just super excited for the match. I would like to quickly plug, because that's going to be my piece for the Bola in general. But if other people want to get more in depth, we're talking about progress where Mark Haskins works. The owner, Jim Smallman, he did his podcast Tuesday Night Jaw, and I listened to it the other night, and it was so amazing to hear this guy who's probably 10 years older than me and been watching PWG just as long as me, if not longer. And he's still super excited about Bola, like people who are seeing PWG for the first time. So if you go and listen to that podcast, he actually has Jack Gallagher, one of the participants in the tournament, on the podcast with him going over Bola. And if you want to hear somebody who's just super passionate and just loves wrestling still to this day, I'd say go listen to them, because they spend about 3 hours breaking down Bola, and I love every minute of it.
Well, Tim, real quick, you know, two questions that come to mind immediately for me. Number one, you know, you talk about Cedric Alexander and kind of the way that he's been riding as of late. Do you think that if he gets too big of an ovation at Bola, will Triple H come out much like a white Sandman Sims and usher him off the stage? but my real question, though, is, you know, you talk about being somebody that's been invested and has watched PWG over the years. Where does this particular lineup stack up in terms of years past for this tournament?
I think this blow for me, this blows almost every other Bola lineup out of the water. PWG has just been growing and growing exponentially. Don't get me wrong, I love Chris Bosh. I love the first Bola when Chris Bosh wins the thing. You know, I love the year when Low Ki wins it. Even the show when Joey Ryan, you know, beats Chris Hero for it to win the Bola, I thought that was a great tournament. But I mean, we got Pete Dunne. I was losing my mind for the past probably year and a half talking about how much we needed Pete Dunne in Bola. And when they announced him, I had essentially given up, and I had thought that there was no way he was going to be there. And then they say Pete Dunne, and I lose my mind. And then they keep going, and they keep announcing who's going to be in it. And, oh, you know, that's really cool. You know, oh, Jack Gallagher, that's crazy. Oh, Cedric Alexander's coming now, I can't believe. But, I mean, here's the big one, Liger. Jushin Thunder Liger. I had already accepted that at my age and just where my fandom comes down, that I was never going to see Liger live. Mm-hmm. I had just accepted that probably a few years ago. It's just not going to happen for me. Because I knew that he's winding down his career. I'm not going to make it over to Japan in time. And when they announced Liger, it's honestly like a dream come true for me. So I can't say that there is a Bola from the past that comes even close to this one. And then to answer the first question, I've already said – I'm on record as saying that I guarantee that there will be an NXT show at the same Legion post that Reseda runs. So I wouldn't be surprised if Triple H is there scouting the venue to see if he can put up those the lights for the Demon Balor's entrance or whatever. You know, he's going to try to run the next NXT TakeOver Reseda zone.
Well, Steve, you know, you brought it up when you were talking about the lineup, and a name that immediately jumped out to me as someone who is not as familiar with the Pro Wrestling Guerrilla product was Cody Rhodes, formerly of the WWE. And, you know, you talk about that matchup with Sami Callihan, and I agree. I think it'll be a lot of smoke and mirrors in that mm-hmm. particular match. But what do you think in terms of now we're in this stage of Cody's career where, you know, he's taking the independent gigs and he's being able to at least have a more realized version of the character he wants to portray. At least that's what he and his wife are saying. What do you expect from Cody in the Battle of Los Angeles?
I expect that there will be an initial big applause for him. But then ultimately, he's going to have to prove that he belongs in that type of style. And from what happened with Evolve, where he just kind of had a perfectly acceptable match, you know, the PWG is a different cat. It is very spot heavy. It is, you know, it is some, you know, very high flying at times. At other times, it's, you know, very brutal mat work. Those fans expect a lot, and I don't know if he's going to be able.
See, neither one of those things are really Cody's forte.
Exactly. So he's going to really have to turn it up. And you know, I have nothing against Sami Callihan, but he's going to be more of a character-driven guy too. It would have been neat to maybe see him against if Liger wasn't there, like a Chris Hero or something like that, where they can, you know, maybe. They might fit together a little bit. I'm intrigued just to see what will happen. Like, will this be an utter train wreck? Will this be a Jeff Hardy and Ring of Honor moment?
Mm.
Or the there's another. What was the PWG? What was AJ Styles and what Curt Hawkins? Timothy that was like the real dud in Bola.
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't like that match. I personally thought it was. There was some miscommunication at the end, but I didn't think it was necessarily a terrible match. But I totally saw where people were coming from.
Right. Timothy, let me ask you real quick. I'm not gonna hide you. What do you think, knowing the crowd, the reaction to Cody's going to be? Do you think that they I think he probably wins the first round, but I don't foresee them pushing him very hard within the tournament.
I honestly don't see him winning.
Oh, no, you don't?
No, I think he's actually – I mean, I hate to be this guy, but I think he's booked the next day on another show somewhere else.
Oh,
so he
okay.
could theoretically fly back and forth because AJ did do that when AJ was in Bola, he worked a show on Saturday and came back Sunday. So it is theoretically possible. But I know that PWG is really, really high on Sami Callihan. So I doubt that they're going to put Sami Callihan out in the first round. The other part of it, too, is if this was PWG 2 or 3 years ago, he would get a tepid reaction when he came out, and then he would have to prove it to the crowd. With the PWG crowd that I know is going to be there now, he's going to get a huge reaction to start off the bat because a lot of the people in the crowd now are similar to that Pavlovian WWE response where they pop huge for the entrances and the big finishing moves. So the crowd are all going to be very familiar with him because there's a lot of NXT and a lot of the kind of fans that think Cody Rhodes was held back in the WWE are going to be in the crowd. So they're going to definitely be super high on him coming out. And I think that the Evolve matches that people are kind of not as high on, I watched the Chris Hero match and I honestly think Cody was fine. And not even fine. I think that any problems that people had with that match, and I hate to say this because I know someone's going to get pissed off, but I felt like it was more on Hero. The hero knee stuff was a little goofy in the middle of the match, and it kind of broke up the flow of the match. Hero bringing in the I'm just going to spoil some of this match, but Hero bringing in the cardboard Dusty Rhodes head, that was, you know, that's all Hero stuff. So to say that like Cody Rhodes was disappointing in that match, I feel like is just a completely wrong take or a wrong perception on the match. So I am honestly positive on Cody Rhodes because I was always a fan of his, and I think he's going to bring it here, especially with a guy who knows how to theoretically work the WWE style in Sami Callihan. And when you talk about stick stuff, PWG is the same place where Chris Bosh won the first Bola. Like I said, character work gets over in PWG. It always has. It always will. Dalton Castle's a god there before he even takes off his bodysuit. So I think with the character work of Cody Rhodes as the pretty boy, son of the plumber, dynasty of wrestling, the prince of wrestling, against essentially the most counterculture. He's in a tag team called Dirty Ugly Fucks. You know, it's like, it's Sami Callihan. There's nothing more anti-Cody Rhodes than Sami Callihan. So having these two guys clash in the first round is a big, it's going to be a big kind of contrast of styles, and I think the crowd's going to be able to easily get behind it.
And real quick, Tim, you know, you brought up Chris Hero's name a couple times, and obviously, you know, a lot of people would say that he is the current and reigning king of the Indies, quote unquote. This isn't his first go round at Bola. What do you think makes this year's iteration of Chris Hero in this tournament different than maybe the Hero that we've seen in years before?
He's the greatest of all time. He's pushing this new gimmick of actually calling himself the greatest of all time, openly saying it, openly making these claims to being a guy who should be in that conversation with a Stan Hansen, with a Masala, a guy that he actually trained with, you know, with these greatest of all time workers. And the thing is that with the year that he's had, it's almost hard to argue with him. I know a lot of people will say he hasn't had the longevity, but I think he's been really good since you've seen him, even in IWA Mid-South. And to this day, he's just phenomenal. And he is another guy who's having the best matches of his career now. So the difference is that Chris Hero is pushing this narrative of building a legend. And if these kind of obviously completely unfounded rumors are true that he may or may not be headed back to WWE soon, I think he has a lot to prove on his last few shots on the indies. I don't know if it's true. I don't really think that he is going to WWE, but I do think he's trying to make his legend. And I think that Bola becoming such a legendary tournament and Chris Hero being, you know, the king of the indie tournament, the guy who's really thought of as the best tournament worker on the planet. He just tore it down at the SCI. I think that he's doing it again. He's going to show everybody why Chris Hero is the greatest of all time. And that's what makes this special than any other year he's been in Bola.
I think that's a hell of a place to wrap things up here tonight. So I thought it was a great episode overall. I thought we covered a lot of ground, talked a little, you know, our feelings, our thoughts on being a wrestling fan right now. We talked a lot of good WWE and Lucha, ROH, and PWG Bola as well. So thank you to all our guests. Timothy, thank you so much for spending most of the night here with us. We'll look to have you back on, hopefully, as Lucha Underground continues on, as well to maybe as after your trip to Bola, we can talk about the how the tournament went, your live experience and whatnot as well. So we'll connect with you on that. And you'll be back with us Monday night on the Place to Be podcast with Scott and myself, looking at December to Dismember, ECW 2006. So
awesome.
Yeah. I jumped all over that when I saw it was coming up.
Our very special Labor Day episode will be laboring through that review, so we look forward to that. And, of course, check out all the other podcasts and written pieces over at placemination.com. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and everything else that's going on out there in the world of social media. So for all of our guests and for Steve and Nate, I'm JT.
Hey, real quick, JR, real
yeah,
quick.
Nate, yeah, Nate.
I don't,
all right, go I ahead.
I don't want to be the interrupter, but I do
are.
Feel
well,
we'd be remiss if we didn't go out at least acknowledging this. You know, we got a lot of functions coming up. Summertime is over,
yeah.
And you might be having a cookout or having dinner with your family and friends. And while you're at dinner, if somebody asks you to pass the salt, don't just pass it to them. Throw it in their eyes as a tribute to that man, Mr. Fuji, that passed away this past week, Harry Fujiwara, one of the greatest and most iconic managers from that 80s time period. And I, you know, definitely a little bit on the stereotypical side, to say the least. But, you know, that man gets that man gets, you know, deserves all the respect in the world. So RIP to Mr. Fuji, because he will be missed.
And by all means, put that salt on your green beans because they are just delicious.
We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Roll out of bed, Mr. Coffee's dead. The morning's looking bright. And your shrink ran off to Europe and didn't even write. And your husband wants to be a girl. Be glad there's one place in the world where everybody knows your name. And they're always glad you came. You wanna go where people know people are all the same. You wanna go where everybody knows your name.